Good morning. I'm Ryan Baker. The Cleveland Guardians won their series with San Francisco, knocking off the Giants 5-2 yesterday. Gavin Williams improves to 12-7 on the year, picking up the win. He also has over 200 strikeouts on the season after striking out 11. The Cincinnati Reds dropped their series with the St. Louis Cardinals, losing 10-9. The Reds giving up 6 unearned runs in the ninth. Two NFL preseason games last night. The Las Vegas Raiders topping the Houston Texans 22-20, and the San Francisco 49ers beat the Los Angeles Chargers 41-17. The Browns and Bengals both had joint practices yesterday. Cleveland was with the Buffalo Bills before their preseason game on Sunday at 1. You can hear that right here on The Fan. Cincinnati practiced with the Chicago Bears. Those two play Sunday at 7. This one's sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling, together to serve you better. Scheduled today at the Waterworks.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then, he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Friday edition of the program. Bo, the boys with you for the next three. Isaiah in for Reese. Bake is here as well. Loaded up. Doug going to join at 9:45, 10 o'clock. What we learned this week, I took in the Browns joint practice yesterday. I can give you a full report on how the Browns appointed themselves against the Buffalo Bills in yesterday's joint practice. Tim May at 10:30. Two-a-days continues in the 11 o'clock hour. This is a fun one. At 11:30, former Bear great Tom Thayer going to join us to preview the Bears and the NFC North. Buzz Bissinger in the mid-80s was looking for a place to write a book about high school football. At least that was the pitch. And he settled on Odessa, Texas. The high school was Odessa Permian, but He interviewed others as well. He interviewed Valdosta, Georgia, went there and kind of got a look at things, the winningest high school football operation in the history of the sport. He went to Massillon High School and took a look at the Tigers, and that was another place that was certainly in consideration. There's rumors that there were others as well, but those three I know were all rumored to be the host site of the book that he was going to write, the book that would become Friday Night Lights. The thing about Friday Night Lights, whether it's the book, the movie, or the TV series, is that the book isn't about the nonfiction players. It's not about Mike Winchell or Boobie Miles or Gary Gaines. It's not about, on the TV series, it's not about fictional characters like Tim Riggins and Lila Garrity, although I love Buddy Garrity, obviously, or even Vince Howard or the Taylors. It's really not about that. Friday Night Lights is about community. That's what it's about. It's about community. And the book was written 40 years ago. And I would argue that while there are certainly some places in this fine state that are as football mad and as obsessed as Odessa is, or as Massillon is, or as Valdosta is, and while there might only be a handful that go to that level of obsession and community and all of it, that most places in the great state of Ohio on a football Friday night are locked in. And you can see the lights. And I would just ask you this question as you're thinking about this. In your community, list the things where 5,000 people show up in this day and age of silos and screens and information that is curated just for what you want. Give me a list of things where 5,000 people show up, minimum. It's a short list. to shortlist. There might be something that happens in the summer, 4th of July. Might be something that your town does if you're down in Circleville and you do the pumpkin thing. There's everybody's got little things, but the one thing that you can guarantee is that for most of Ohio tonight, your communities will be at football stadiums, and they will be there in the thousands. And while you're trying to think of a list of other things that draw that type of community together, understand it's going to be a very, very long wait. So Friday Night Lights is an epic book. It's as good a IP that has been done in the sports world in the last 40 years, and the fact that it netted a best-selling book, which is still the standard for sports books. It netted a movie that is roundly regarded as one of the best sports movies, and the television series is among the best television series of all time. It works because it's about community. That's what it's about. If you listen to Kirk Cousins this week, I don't know if you saw this interview, he was talking about, you know, some of the stuff that's happened in his college and pro career. And he gave a great line. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, nothing, you can throw a Hail Mary in the National Football League, you can win a big game in college. There is nothing for me better than a Friday night win in my town. There's nothing better. And if you played it, and if you were lucky enough to be one of the kids who got to play on Friday night, awesome. If you're one of the kids who got to play in the band on a Friday night, awesome. If you're one of the girls who is a cheerleader, awesome. If you're one of the students who take your shirts off and paint stuff on your chests and run up and down sidelines, awesome. All of it wins. High school football in Ohio is about community. That's what it's about. It's about the front porch to your school. It's about school spirit. It's about togetherness. It's about all of those things. And in an era where we are getting farther and further away from participating in things as a community, this remains. And from what I've seen, it's unchanged. Not much different. Not much different. I think I could go back 20 years, and I remember getting in Chopper 10 the first time and going up in the air, and we would get out. First trip I ever went was south. It was southeast. It was down, went down towards Athens and Lancaster and a couple of spots out that way. And we went down there, and you get up on the air and you just see the lights in the distance. And every single one of those, you think to yourself, we'd go and land. Here's 6,000 people. Go up, go over here, land, 6,000 people. And you could arbitrarily pick any one of those lights, and they would all be in the similar situation. If it doesn't get you, I can't help you, man. This is where it starts. I've said forever, I've lived in many states, there's not a state in the union that does Friday, Saturday, Sunday football better than Ohio. It started last night with some of the Thursday night games, but it starts in earnest tonight. So if you're on the fence, go. Go to a game. Feel the magic of it. I'm telling you, it's going to feel the same as the last time you were there, Bake.
One of the things that I love about the high school football overtime show that mm-hmm. Lee Cochran and I have done together since 2014 is that I get to keep up with all this, and I'm involved mm-hmm. in all of the high school football. The thing that sucks the most is that I'm in a studio, and yeah. I don't get to go out to games. So when we're done after the regular season and the playoffs start, and I get mm-hmm. to start going to games, mm-hmm. one of the coolest feelings is I'm going to this school, sometimes maybe a school that I've never been to, and all of a sudden you're driving and you see this hue. And you're like, all right, I'm yep. getting close. The stadium's mm-hmm. right over there. And mm-hmm. then you get up there and you get to see the people. And there's almost always people in the parking lot that always. Have some grills set up or some coolers. And they're getting ready for the game. And you've got people in the stands. And some people that you know have sat in that same seat for 30 years.
Yep.
Or that same spot on the fence down in the corner by where you're standing, Bo.
Yep, right.
For 30 years. And yeah. Go to a game tonight in Grove City or mm-hmm. West Jefferson or London or Licking Valley yep. or Newark and tell me that you didn't enjoy your time.
It's impossible not to.
And it, my biggest takeaway is it's the exact same. Like, I park cars at my high school's football games because I'm a high school lacrosse coach, and that's one of our big fundraisers. And so I'm out there parking cars tonight, and it is exactly the same as when I played there years ago when I went as a child and would go play on the hill. There's kids playing on the hill now that were me 20 years ago, and it's the exact same. And so many of the people that I see as I'm parking cars are the same people that watched me play 10 years ago and were still there 20 years ago watching my older brothers play. And it's just the community aspect. I will see a million people tonight that I only see at football Friday night games.
It's the community part. And that's the thing that's changed the most. Right?
We live in a world that doesn't promote that anymore.
Not at all. No, 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 no. I'm only interested in my thoughts and people who think like me. That's it. That's one of the beautiful things of sports in general, by the way. Whether you go to a Buckeye game, a Bengal game, a Browns game, Blue Jackets crew, whatever. Go to any game you want. You sit next to people, ideologically, you could be completely opposed. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. You go to a high school football game tonight, nobody cares. You're just rooting for your team, for your school, for your kids. Or even kids that aren't your kids, that you have no relation to because you've rooted for those colors and those helmets and those cheerleaders and that band for your whole life, and that's community. And that's the beauty of it. That's the absolute beauty of it. We'll get a preview from Bake on the Central Ohio teams that we ought to be paying attention to. The state is going to be fascinating this year across the state in high school football. We'll get into that. The Buckeyes inching closer to the opener. The defensive guys had some availability. How are the replacements shoring up? And I was witness to Browns Bills yesterday. Watched it all. Give you some impressions on that coming up as well. We're off and running on a kind of football Friday. I think we kind of are. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on the Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on the Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny skies are here for your Friday. Yeah, ending the week with some nice weather. Highs around 81. For your Saturday, increasing clouds with spotty showers and storms popping up in the afternoon and evening. Highs right around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
And hopes here at Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee with regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. I'll tell you something really cool. You can still do some new traditions in high school football as well. My buddy Ted, who's got a senior and a sophomore on our high school team here, he decided this year to start a new tradition at our school, and he's doing it's basically a breakfast with the dads. So 7 a.m., the whole football team gathered outside the football field before, you know, Friday night football today, and the dads made eggs and bacon and breakfast sandwiches and all of the potatoes and all of those things. And as I rolled in there with NBC this morning, like 6:45, and I just went, well, this is it, man. Like, this is just one of those cool things that you can do. This is a community thing. And I did tell Ted, I'm not sure how excited I'm going to be to go to this in like October 17th, October 24th might be a little different attitude, but today was beautiful this morning, as we get ready to kick it off. High school football last night, some thrilling stuff around the state. In terms of some state champions involved, I know Avon, who is a 2-time state champion, with a 2-point conversion to beat Ignatius last night. So that's one that's out there. There's a big thrilling one down in Southwest Ohio as well, wasn't it? Was it Princeton?
Princeton and Moeller played at Paycor Stadium last night, and Princeton got the, win in that one. And we were talking in the first segment about high school football and how it gets to everyone. They have those memories and whatnot. There's no way those kids that were on that field last night in that Avon St. Ignatius game will ever forget that moment.
Never. And they were at the Brown Stadium. They were playing at the Brown Stadium and the one in Cincinnati down in where the Bengals. I mean, how cool is that to be able to have that type of experience? And Bake, you're all over all of this. Some massive. What's happened in Central Ohio since I've been here in terms of the amount of teams that can win state championships consistently is really pretty stunning, especially at the Division I, Division II level, how that's come along. And Division II this year in the state is absolutely bonkers nuts beyond anything that I've ever seen. And I've been around high school football in the state 20 years. We got some interesting teams here in Central Ohio this year as well, my friend.
We do. Real quick, another one last night that involved a Central Ohio team, smaller school. That was a big one. Versailles beat Harvest Prep 21-18 in that game. Harvest Prep, they dropped to D6 this year. Okay. Their biggest question is if they can get into the playoffs because they play a brutal schedule. They've got Marion Local coming up. They've got Watterson coming up. I mean, they're playing everybody. So
yeah,
they could be one of the best teams in the state in D6, and they may not even get into the postseason. But you talked about Division II, and I know the OHSAA just put this rule in, I believe, two seasons ago. But you're seeing a lot of Division II teams this year. They've jumped to Division I.
Yep.
They've punted on trying to play. And Bobby this morning, I went on with Morning Juice this morning. Bobby kept saying, well, they want to play the best competition. That's why they're moving up. Well, the best competition in the state might be in Division II this year.
If you did an all-state, regardless of classification, poll, in the top 10, how many are D2?
So they just did this. USA Today just did this. Massillon was the number one team in the state.
Right.
St. Ed's might have been two. I'd have to pull it up and look at it. But Watterson was three.
Yeah.
Big Walnut was up in there. Toledo Central Catholic was in it. Avon, Anderson, Akron Hoban.
They
were all in it. So.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's an absolute bonkers thing. And so Watterson goes up to two. So they're now in the mix of all of that as well. And you and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. There's a setup where they're in the same region with Big Walnut and Massillon, which means that a regional semifinal will contain two of those three.
Yep, because the last 2 years that semifinal has been Massillon and Big Walnut. So now you throw Watterson into that mix. DeSales is in that region as well, and DeSales is very good. It's crazy how those teams, and Big Walnut has been the team that's won Region 7 the past 2 years. They've beaten Massillon, and they bring Nolan Burley back, who's their running back, who's rushed for over 2,000 yards the last 2 years as a sophomore and a junior. He's going to go to Northwestern and play linebacker. They bring their quarterback, Eli Stump, back, who's going to Michigan State. Some people say he might be the best quarterback in the state of Ohio this year that's a senior. They have Mike Green. They have Thomas Miner on the defensive line, who's a junior who's getting recruited by Ohio State. Just think if Jameer Brown had stayed with that Big Walnut team, how crazy they would be. It would make that division even more nuts.
Is he at Wayne?
He's back at Huber Heights Wayne.
Wayne, yeah. Yeah, and he has to sit out a couple games, I saw, right, because of the transfer thing?
So I saw yesterday he's been suspended for the first two games, and I heard it has nothing to do with the transfers.
Oh, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't
I heard have anything it's to do totally with it. Something yeah. else. I guess there's going to be an announcement on what the violations were next week sometime, but so he's got to sit the first two.
What in Division I Central Ohio, who you have your eye on?
I love both of the Pickerington schools this year. Pickerington North is loaded with talent. They've got Andrick Thomas back at running back who's going to Ohio University. They have G.O. McKnight, who's a junior defensive back who has over 30 Division I offers already. They have a transfer from Pickerington Central, actually, in Antonio Williams, who's a sophomore defensive lineman who already has 7 or 8 big-time D1 offers. Their biggest thing, Pickerington North has always seemed to be a team that had a slip-up game. Like, well, how did they lose to that team? Yeah. Nate Hillerich, their coach, says he thinks they're different this year. So that team is very talented. And Pickerington Central's fun to me. They have a very senior-laden defense. They have a young offense. They're starting 5 sophomores on the offensive side of the ball. Their running back, Edmund McAllister, started as a freshman last year. He had almost 1,200 yards. He got rated this week by one of the recruiting services as the number 2 running back in the country for the class of 29.
Good Lord.
So he's already got well over 20 Division I offers. He's a stud. Winnie Garnett, who's, the, I believe, the son of Winfield Garnett, former Buckeye D tackle. He's okay. A sophomore quarterback. He's already 6'5", 205 pounds.
Nuts.
It's so nuts. I think they're going to be fun.
All they need in Pickerington is just time. But like, what's happened there over the last 20 years with those two schools is just stupefying.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened there. It's just absolutely nuts.
Yeah, they're ridiculously talented. Jay Sherritt, the longtime coach at Pickerington Central, helped build that program, and Jeff LaMonaco is keeping it going. The Olentangies are going to be fun to watch, Bo, this year, because Orange loses a ton, and they won the Division I state championship last year. Liberty won it 2 years ago. I think Liberty is going to be pretty darn good with Alex Leonard at quarterback, and they just, all of those schools have so many players. So they've got like 90 players on their roster, 100 players on their roster, but they're all replacing people. You know, Olentangie Berlin, they're kind of young, but they started off slow last year, and then they won six in a row before they lost to Orange in the playoffs. And that's our game tonight, actually, is Olentangie Orange at Olentangie Berlin here on The Fan. So that'll be fun to see. Gahanna has a lot of really good players on their team. So Division I, that region, I guess there's some in Region II. All of Region III, though, is Central Ohio. That's been the state champ the last 2 years.
It certainly has. Favorite high school football player from your time covering it in Central Ohio?
Well, from my time covering it, because my favorite was back when I was in school watching Andy Katzenmoyer.
Big Cat.
That was fun.
There's all these guys that I've covered that ended up in the pros, whether it was in Florida or Georgia or even here, that have ended up in the pros, like Joshua Perry. Like, I interviewed Joshua Perry when he was in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite, it was Bo DeLandi.
Hilliard Davidson.
Hilliard Davidson just had this system. And that kid was kind of untackleable. And at that time, like, a public school from Central Ohio winning a Division I state championship was crazy. And they won two.
Probably, Bo, my favorite player covering all time would have been back in 2012. So I had just started doing this for just my second year doing it. Was a linebacker at Hartley named Jawan Woodley. And he ended up going to college at Toledo. Mm-hmm. And then his senior year, he hurt his knee. He ended up going to training camp with the Browns, but he never really got over that knee injury. He was a monster.
Yeah.
He was so good. He would play some running back sometimes, but he was mostly on the defensive side of the ball. He was so physically gifted. That's probably, and I was up really, like, I was there every week watching him practice and stuff.
Yeah.
So that was probably my favorite during my time.
Le'Veon Bell was a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a scene. Watching him run was just crazy. And then, like, here's the other thing. Like, it's not like anybody thought that Joe Burrow at the Plains was going to be Joe Burrow. I mean, I did a handful of Joe Burrow games. Like, we knew he was a really good player, but nobody thought that he was going to be Joe Burrow. You know, like, it just had no point of reference. Sometimes they just come out of nowhere. So enjoy it. So tonight, you guys, when do you guys start?
So our game of the week again is Olentangie Orange at Olentangie Berlin. Lee and I, with High School Football Overtime, go live right after the game. That's usually sometime 9:30, 9:45, give or take a few. And then we will go right up to 11 o'clock.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Then you turn it to Channel 10, you get 1st and 10, and away you go. Buckeyes inching closer to their opener. Can this defense hold up? We will answer, or attempt to answer, that question coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Friday edition of the program. Buckeyes inching closer to that opener, now well into it now. We'll start to get things crystallized here over the next week or so. We've commented on this several times in the lead up to this season, and one of the things that's remarkable, I think there's a couple factors to it. Number one, because of NIL and free transfer, we do actually have quite a bit of parity in the sport. We do. It's just the facts. There are upwards of 10 to 12 teams that have, I think you could walk in and say, yeah, they got a shot at it. Wouldn't shock me if they were in the mix for the national title. And if you're one of those people who says, well, that's nonsense. Who would have thought Indiana a year ago would be a team that would win a national title? Not very many outside of potentially Bloomington. So it's more wide open than it's ever been. These rosters have changed more than anything we've ever seen before. And at Ohio State, you are replacing a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball. The belief is that the offense is going to be good enough to carry it. And it sounds like the offense is coming along. I saw yesterday was the BTN day at Ohio State camp, which is always pretty valuable. And I saw some of the comments from Revson and Jake Butt about what they saw. And they mentioned Chris Henry and Brock Boyd. Those two freshmen really look like they've come along. When we were there the first 3 days, they were, again, though, they're freshmen. They were kind of deep down on the depth chart. So you didn't really get to see a whole lot of them. It was more McEwen and some of those guys at the top, but it sounds like Chris Henry's really having a hell of a camp. And so we know offensively that it's going to be elite. The question is, can you reload on a defense that was the best maybe that's ever played here, and certainly off a 2-year stretch that you could put up against anybody in terms of what they did defensively? The answer to that is going to be in the development of the depth. And the thing that I think ought to make all of you sleep well at night is knowing that Ohio State has among the best position coaches in the country on that side of the ball, and Matt Patricia leading over all of it. And so I do believe that they will be right back where they were. There is a standard here that has to be upheld, and my guess is it would. Jermaine Matthews is one of those guys who is back, and he's going to have to be the leader in a secondary that does not have Caleb Downs, does not have Davis and Igbinosin, and they are going to have to be a group that steps up. We believe that they will. Here's Jermaine on replacing those two guys.
It's different because since I've been here, there's been a lot of veteran experience in the room, and now I really have the most experience that we have in the room. So I think it's just like a new challenge for us, but there's nothing we can't handle, and we've been getting better every day.
At the linebacker position, you know that Peyton Pierce is going to be at the middle of it. My hunch is he doesn't leave the field. That would be my guess, that he'll kind of be the captain of this thing defensively, or certainly one of them. But alongside him, some new faces. They went in the portal for Christian Allegro. And then from a development standpoint, you hope Riley Pettijohn and those guys continue to come along. Let's hear from Allegro first on the standard that he is trying to live up to in that linebacker room.
As soon as I got here, even before I committed, you know, Laurinaitis and Patricia, you could kind of sense, you know, the high standard that was here. So obviously I wasn't going to come here, you know, with anything less than that. So I think I came in here just doing my best. And, you know, obviously there's a very high standard to be held here, and I got to live up to that for sure.
Riley Pettijohn's a guy, I remember Threes calling me before one of his Friday Night Lights games down in Texas, and he played in one of those giant castle stadiums that they have down there. And this is a guy that James loved in the process. And when I got a look at him in camp, I could not believe how big he had gotten with a year and a half of body by Mick, but didn't even look like the same human. I'm sure that James's room, and I'm sure Threes is making sure that this message gets across, is, boy, how could we ever replace Sonny and Arvell? How could we do it? Who's ready for that? I'm sure they've heard that nonstop, and perhaps that creates a chip. Here's Riley Pettijohn on that chip.
It's a big chip because, you know, they both went top 10 guys, so it's definitely a big chip. But I know the guys in the room can feel it, and we're going to do our best to live up to that standard.
I do think this year it's nice to not open with Texas. I would like the juice of opening with Texas. And honestly, week one is pretty soft college football compared to what last year's was in terms of the haymaker matchups. Like week one this year's pretty soft. Week two's got some great ones. And then that's obviously Ohio State, Texas. Then week three's got, I think that's LSU Ole Miss, which is going to be, I mean, a blood feud. But I think it's nice to kind of wade into this defensively. And one of the things that really jumped out to me when we were talking to Patricia and James and a lot of the defensive guys at camp was this feeling that while the top end maybe right now isn't as good as the top end was a year ago, they really believed in their depth. And they're going to play a lot of that depth. And I do think it's noteworthy that Riley Pettijohn is one of the guys who is available, because that tells me Threes is going to play some of his depth this year. Last year, you couldn't take Arvell and Sonny off the field. It would have been silly to take either one of them off. Now I think you're going to see a rotation where a lot of these guys get some run.
I think it's very interesting with Jermaine Matthews, going to him first. He talks about he's the oldest guy there now, and all those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And he was different yesterday. Jermaine has always been excitable, say what he wants, loud. There was a difference to Jermaine Matthews yesterday, a little more reserved, and he even said he's just really locked in on the season. So you see a lot of maturity and growth. Now, I hope he doesn't lose any of that swagger on the field that he plays with, because I think it's one of the things that makes him so great.
Yep.
Is he believes he's just as good as anybody or better than anybody he goes up against. And you have to be that way as a corner. So I hope he hasn't lost any of that swagger, but that confidence wasn't coming across as cockiness, maybe as it could have in the past. The other thing, Riley Pettijohn, he missed the spring.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard much about him. All of a sudden this week, Riley Pettijohn's the guy you're hearing about maybe the most on the defense, and that might be scary for teams Ohio State has to play.
He's one of those guys with that pedigree. I couldn't believe what he looked like physically, Bick, Riley. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I just could not believe what he looked like just from a physicality standpoint from the last time I saw him, which I guess, to be fair, was last end of last football season.
Yeah.
Like, hadn't seen him because he wasn't there in spring, you know? So
Nick Marotti can do a lot in that amount of time.
He can. Yeah, you get on that Ohio State strength program, you get that nutrition program, and away we go, and things start to change in a hurry. So it's just one of those things that you have such comfort knowing who is helping curate these guys. And you just have such a trust in the level of coaching that they're getting and what they do in development and what they do in recruiting, that it truly is a next man up thing. And honestly, we've been this way defensively really for most of the last 30, I mean, well, good Lord, Ohio State defense has been that way for 50 years, but it's just been a hell of a standard that they have to uphold. And it feels like they got an incredible group of coaches right now to be able to do it. So I have no questions at all that even if this defense isn't as good as it was last year right away, that they'll get there.
And it feels like early in the season, defenses are always the ones that have the boost. They always say defenses are always ahead of offenses early in the season, which could be a good formula for Ohio State this year because there's no questions about the offense. Like week one, week two versus Texas, we should be expecting the offense to be performing at a pretty high level. I mean, we're bringing back eight starters to it. You bring back Julian, Bo, Jeremiah. There's plenty of experience on the offense to where I don't have any questions that we won't be able to put up points early. And then if the defense can just get a little bit of a boost against some of these offenses, like with Texas, they bring about half of their offense back, and then they have six returners coming back. And so there's still some things to figure out there. If our defense can hold their own and then the offense play above the level that a lot of other offenses are playing at that time, it should be a pretty good formula early in the season for these Buckeyes to figure out the defense along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be. It sets up pretty nicely for them. I was looking at next weekend. So next weekend is your week zero games. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Next weekend is, and it's pretty interesting. Like that there isn't, I mean, it's like Florida State, New Mexico State, Stanford, Hawaii, Virginia, NC State, I guess probably the best one's North Carolina, TCU. It's actually too bad that they didn't. This goes, I mean, my calendar thing. Start next week. Do week zero right now and get this thing going. There's no reason to wait until September to get this thing going. Like, get yourselves ahead of the NFL calendar. It's such an easy fix to be able to do that I don't understand why they haven't. But still a couple of weeks away, obviously. But that defense is going to be one that you're going to hear a lot from as this season goes along. Doug LaMaurice is going to join us a little earlier than normal on the Buckeye side of things. We'll ask him about NFL players back in college, among other things, coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
And an ice.
How many men signed the Declaration of Independence?
Five.
I'll go six.
I mean, if you add 50, you're correct. It's 56.
Really?
Rothman and Ice. Weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
A little earlier than normal for our weekly chat with Mr. LaMaurice. Doug LaMaurice joining us. Bill and Doug Show. YouTube, you can find it there on the Brighting Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. I interviewed a kid named TJ Harden this summer for the Browns, running back from UCLA and SMU.
Yeah.
He entered the transfer portal 2 days ago, Doug.
Yeah, good luck.
Unintended consequences, baby. They just don't stop. Like, I love the game and all of it, but my God, every time you think like, okay, well, we've reached the end, you get what happens this week, and all of a sudden you got guys. I mean, the Browns claimed a tight end from Ole Miss that's now in the portal. He was supposed to report to Browns camp. Now he's in the portal. I see this from Andrew Brand, who's been around the NFL for the longest time, that agents are asking NFL teams to cut their guys who are borderline now so they can get back to NIL. Like, this certainly was not what it was intended to be, but everyone is basically looking for a crack in the foundation, and they're finding it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's, can we shame them into not coming back? I don't know. Like, is there no shame? It's like, you're a pro, you're done. I don't know. Is that okay? Go on to the next thing. I know you want to make a little more money. I get it. It's just hard. Like, so all these guys, you know, they made the 5 for 5 rule, but they wanted it backwards to take them into account, right? And the NCAA didn't do that. Now they're suing for that. But also, I think, like, well, like, all these guys now, well, they didn't get the 5th year, but you know what they did get? They got paid while they were in college. And a bunch of guys before them didn't get that. And we had guys sue for that before. Hey, you didn't let me make money. So I don't know. I'm an old man. Sometimes in life, it's like, people now get to do something that you didn't get to do. So are you going to sue for it? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Should the NCAA have, like, you know, done it backwards and included the people from last year? I guess, maybe. But again, it's just all these lawsuits. You got to figure out a way where you don't get sued in every state court every time you try to make a rule. And that's their fault for not finding a way to bargain it. You know, it is their fault. But my God, do we have no shame? Stay in the NFL camp, man.
No, you have none. And I think the other thing that you have is you have no shame amongst institutions and coaches either, because all they want is to win. Like, they don't care. Right. I mean, you had Greg Sankey out there yesterday saying, like, trying to put a stop to this, like trying to stop it. Meantime, LSU's trying to sign him.
Right.
A school in his conference that he represents is trying to sign him.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, yeah, you could, I mean, although I don't know, would that be colluding if everybody was like, let's not sign the NFL guys? I don't know. There'd probably be a lawsuit for that.
Well, they did it with Sorgsby, though.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. As long as Ohio State doesn't take Jaden Fielding back, I'm good. So
that certainly helps. Regardless of how it all is, and we did 20 most interesting programs in July, and I know you've taken a bigger look outside the Ohio State envelope as well. The thing that jumped out to me is that, for all of the unintended consequences and missteps and all of the other things that have happened, one thing that this has all done, NIL, free transfer, 12-team playoff, there was forever screams for parity. Now, I wasn't one of these guys, Doug. I didn't need the parity. I think everyone, I liked it the way it was, but I'm a get off my lawn guy on this one. I think you got like 10 or 12 teams, Doug, who could win this thing this year. I really do. I think there are certain, I mean, Ohio State's number one. They got 50 new guys.
Yeah. And the top group, like, there's a clear, like, top 7, right? Like, the betting odds, like, everybody knows that, right? It's Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, Texas, Georgia, Notre Dame, Miami is that top 7. But then that next tier is interesting, right? LSU, USC, BYU, right?
Yep.
So that, and those teams don't feel like, as good as Ohio State is, as much as Notre Dame has back, I don't think BYU and LSU and USC say, like, well, we have no chance against those guys, right? So, this is, and again, like, are we taking meaning out of the regular season in some ways? I guess, but we're also adding a lot of meaning because you're going to have games in October between teams that could make the playoff, and once they get in, could make noise, and like their game in October is really going to matter about who's going to get in. So we were at that point, right, where there was the 4-team playoff. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma were taking 3 out of the 4 every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here in Columbus, like, man, there's a lot to talk about, but like you could feel the rest of the sport getting tired of that. And so, and that is the thing, like, you know, there's crazy stuff to complain about. You can feel people getting ready for ball, man.
Yeah.
You know, like the Saturdays are going to be good. And there's just, it's just more meaning. Like, again, the game between number 14 and 21 in week 8 man, I want to watch that because it matters for more than the Carquest Bowl. So I like it, man. Ball's good. Yeah. The ball's good.
The ball's really good. And this is a, you're in a spot now where, you know, we had the AP poll come out this week. And for the first time since 2015, when Ohio State is unanimous, there was no SEC team that got a first place vote in this thing, which is something that I know you're very happy about, but no one would have saw that coming 5-6 years ago. But quite honestly, they were left behind on all of this, and they were arrogant and they were behind on all of it, and they're trying to play catch up now. But that's a pretty stunning thing. You go back 5 years and say, yeah, no Alabama, no Georgia, no first place votes for either one of them. Wait, what? LSU either?
And I think it's, and the idea that it coalesced around Ohio State, that it's nobody thought that of the SEC teams. Mm-mm. But we were talking about this again, like there's no, I don't think there's an obvious team this year, but I think a lot of the voters, when you couldn't find an obvious team, they went to the program. Mm-hmm. So who's the best program right now? It's Ohio State.
Yeah.
Right? Like Texas might have more talent. Oregon might have more talent. Notre Dame has more experience, right? But who's the best program? Who do you trust? And Ohio State didn't get it done last year. But you still, I think, the structure, the infrastructure, you know, the high floor, all that, you still trust the Buckeyes more than anybody out there. And Georgia hasn't won a playoff game in the last two seasons, mm-mm, right? Has Texas shown anything of, like, really getting over the top when it matters? They lost a goofy game last year to keep them out of the playoff. You can't trust the SEC, Bo.
No.
So where do you go? You go to Ohio State.
Yeah, and really, you did it. I mean, the teams you're most comfortable with are Ohio State, Oregon, and Notre Dame, and then probably Indiana, just because who could ever doubt Cignetti now? You just can't. Yeah. Like, you just assume that he'll just run it back in some way and get the best out of Hoover, and away you go. Who would you would have had number one? Did you do an AP poll vote?
Yeah. No. I don't think they recognize the Bill and Doug Show as an official AP member at the moment.
That's sad. You need to.
I might have gone Indiana, and not because like they're the champ, because like it's everything changes. I think it's a silly way to vote, but like because I'm not sure, and I do think they have a lot back. They have a great linebacker pair. They're strong on the offense and defensive lines. They still have some dudes in the secondary. I think they have two excellent receivers. The quarterback doesn't have to be as good as Mendoza for them to be good. They kept both coordinators. I probably would not have had Ohio State number one. I probably would have gone Indiana 1, Notre Dame 2,
okay,
and then Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, like 3, 4, 5 in some order. But it's interesting, right? I mean, there's absolutely a case for Ohio State number one. I was a little surprised between the two polls. I think Ohio State got 70-something total first-place votes, and the other six teams combined got 63. So Ohio State got more than half of the overall first-place votes, which was, again, like, we know Ohio State. Like, they have a lot of great players. They also have some questions. But that's the respect that Ohio State's getting right now. And you can't argue. I mean, you can't argue with it. I just probably would have gone some slightly different.
Ohio State's Berkshire Hathaway is an investment. It's not going to embarrass you. It's going to be fine. You're going to do just fine. Just put it in, you'll be fine. So we have a ton of audience that listens. We have data that proves this in Northeast Ohio. Doug, I know you're going to have an availability up there. Tell the people where they can come participate.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just had a great trivia night in Cincinnati last night. The final stop on the Bill and Doug Show World Trivia Tour. Tuesday night, we moved it, Bo. Mm-hmm. We moved it because of the Browns preseason game. Tuesday night in Brunswick, Ohio, 8 to 10 p.m. at Panini's Bar and Grill. 2 hours of Ohio State trivia. We'd love to see some folks out there. And I have one other minor announcement, if I can pass it along.
Please.
The new national show, the new Big Ten show that we're doing, has soft launched.
Oh.
You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on your podcast feeds. It's called Northern Aggression, the podcast of Northern Aggression. We're talking Big Ten ball. We're talking national ball from a Northern perspective. We're going to be doing 3 or 4 shows a week. One show is up now. We're going to be dropping 4 more next week. So if people want to come find us, we're there. Still doing a ton of Ohio State. We're also now doing this.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Some of the best content you're ever going to find. Thanks for your time, buddy, as always.
Thanks, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, BillandDougShow.com is where you find it. And then this Tuesday, for you Northeast Ohio folks who listen down here, in Brunswick at Panini's on the 25th for Ohio State Trivia Night for Bill and Doug. What we learned this week, quite a bit. We'll get to that coming up next in the second hour. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. Gavin Williams improved to 12-7 on the year, and the Cleveland Guardians won their series with San Francisco. They knock off the Giants 5-2. Williams now has 201 strikeouts on the season after striking out 11. You can't make it up for the Cincinnati Reds. They give up 6 unearned runs in the ninth, and they drop their series with the St. Louis Cardinals, losing 10-9. The Browns and Bengals both had joint practices yesterday. Cleveland was with the Buffalo Bills before their preseason game this Sunday at 1. Of course, you can hear that right here on The Fan. Cincinnati practice with the Chicago Bears. Those two play Sunday at 7. Columbus Blue Jackets announced that goaltender Elvis Merzlikins is out after undergoing shoulder surgery. This one's sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Open a savings account for the youth in your life with just $5 at BMI, and they'll put $100 into a youth certificate.
Our top men are working on everything. Except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Friday edition of the program. Browns and Bengals joint practices yesterday. You'll hear from Todd Monken, Joe Burrow on that. Tim May coming up in 28 minutes from now. Two-a-days coming up in the next hour, which means what we learned this week comes up right now.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
So I had a really cool thing happen yesterday. I'll do the Brown side of this coming up in 14 minutes. And they appointed themselves very well. Very well. They didn't get run off the field by the Bills, nothing like that. They definitely hung and hung with a team that a lot of people can think can win the Super Bowl this year. And a reason that a lot of people think that that team can win the Super Bowl is because 17. So I was thinking about this. I think I mentioned this yesterday, Bake, on the show. The last time I remember seeing like a quarterback of Hall of Fame talent practice was Carson Palmer. And it was in Georgetown, Kentucky, is where that was, where that Bengals camp was. And I remember watching Carson Palmer, and every throw was on the screws, like never hit the ground, 7-on-7, no matter what it did. It was all perfect, in stride, everything hit. Yesterday, I got to watch Josh Allen do that. And it's a scene, man, when you watch a master at their craft operate at that level, that close in a practice. It's one thing in a game. Like, you go to NFL games, you see that level, and okay, fine. But in practice, when you're watching them take rep after rep after rep and seeing passes that defy logic, that they get to places that they do. He had a play yesterday in the 11-on-11 where he, in the team portion, where he had the slant. I can't remember who the receiver was on it, but he had the slant, and he kind of cocked it because the Browns linebacker shifted into that zone. They kind of dropped into a cover two, and the linebacker shifted over, and it was one of those ones where he kind of read it, and he kind of half pump faked the quick slant. He waited for the receiver to clear, and then he put it right by the Browns linebacker's ear, like that. Just right by. And I just went, well, okay. That's when you have that's just, there's just a level, even amongst greats. When you see a gold jacket, first ballot, Hall of Fame, MVP level quarterback operate, even among elite athletes, it's just different. And it was really cool to get to see Allen kind of operate yesterday.
It's one of my favorite things you say sometimes, Bo, and you almost said it there when talking about Allen, where you're like, oh, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes you just see certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the first time I went out to a DeSales practice and saw RJ Day as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that's different than most high school quarterbacks. And it wasn't that his arm was better or he was more physically imposing. He just did everything technically right that a quarterback should. And you're like, oh, well, he's grown up around Ryan. Of course, that's going to be different. Even the practice reps, even something where you're not going to throw the ball. Every motion was intentional and everything meant something. And you just see it sometimes, you know, whether it be somebody's speed
or their arm strength or their size or their physical strength. It's just like, oh, that's next level.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know it when you see it. It's hard to describe it. It's really cool as my boys have gotten older when I saw it a lot in basketball because I coached them all in basketball, and I would see a kid that you could identify. I remember NBC played on an AAU team a couple of years ago that had a kid on it that has already played for Real Madrid. He's already played professionally for Real Madrid like that, and he's going to be like the Darren Peterson kid. And I remember seeing him in like fourth grade, and it was one of those where that's different. That's going to track. If that kid gets height, everything else is there. The bounce is there. The length is there. The feel, all of it. You can just see it. And it's one of the things that's cool as we get back into high school sports, and a lot of it's already started. Football started last night, starts in earnest tonight. You can see it. And then to see it, it's one thing, though, to see it in that scenario where you're talking about fourth and fifth grades. It's another thing to say there's 32 NFL teams. These guys are all the very best of the best, and even there's an elevated level of that. That's even beyond.
He's playing the hardest position, making it look easy. Like the ease of a 15, 20-yard pass that for a lot of teams would be like, oh, that was a big play. And for Josh Allen, it's like that is a typical first and 10.
There wasn't a single time yesterday, and I thought the Browns defense didn't have Carson Schlesinger, didn't have Malik Collins. Mike Hall was running with the twos. Tyson Campbell wasn't always in there at corner. So, like, it wasn't complete. But there, I didn't think there was anything that he did yesterday that he did not have the answers to the test to. No matter what they threw at him, looks-wise, whatever, answered. There was only one time I remember the ball hitting the ground from him off the top of my head, and it was kind of on. It was kind of a wheel route from, I want to say it was James Cook. I think it was. Kind of a wheel route from him out of the backfield, and it was kind of a throwback where he's throwing back across the grain, and he overthrew it, overshot it. But he also put it like the only place where it was not in harm's way, where only his guy was going to get it. That was the only guy, or no one. And that was the only time I remember the ball hitting the ground. He was just that. He was just that good. And it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's a crazy sliding doors moment with him, because if the Browns take him at one, does he become this? Who knows? But it's not even, I mean, that's Hugh Jackson and all of that. That was such a mess. It's hard to know, like, if he could have survived that. But a lot of the reason people didn't take him that high is because there was fear that he wasn't accurate. And it was coming on the heels of Jake Locker. You remember him, the Washington quarterback who Tennessee took really high. And he was like a 50% college passer. And they're like, well, we can get him there. Well, they couldn't. They didn't get him there. Allen did one of the things that nobody does. He became accurate. He did. He taught himself accuracy. I mean, this was a guy who didn't grow up with quarterback coaching, wasn't going to quarterback school. Like, he was a kid from California who couldn't get a shot, eventually got one at Wyoming. But he didn't come up in the traditional sense that now these kids do, like Julian. I mean, Julian's been groomed for this since he was probably 8. He's been groomed for this. That wasn't Josh at all. He was very raw, and he took to the coaching. A lot of guys won't take to the coaching. He took to the coaching and mechanically got to the point where he's elite now.
And it's crazy, Bo, because you talk about this all the time. Like, we see these athletes at such an early age anymore, and they're getting coverage like David Gabriel George's and Peyton Manning's son are on TV last night on ESPN. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, how did people miss all along the way on this guy? And it happens. Mm-hmm. It happens quite a bit. But like Josh Allen, the physical tools were always there.
Always.
How did he end up slipping through the cracks and going to Wyoming? And then the Browns weren't the only team that passed on him in the NFL draft that year.
I think I have it off the top of my head. So the Browns picked one and they went Bake. And Bake wasn't a bust. He's not a bust. He's a very solid NFL quarterback. He's not Josh Allen. He's not Lamar Jackson. But he's not a bust. Sam Darnold goes two. Also not a bust.
Sure looked like it was, though.
For the longest time. But how much of that was on him? And how much of it was on the places that were trying to incubate him? And just didn't understand what they had. So he's certainly not a bust, but he goes two. So one and two. So Allen could have gone to the Browns or the Jets. The three pick in that is Saquon. So that's the Giants.
I think Saquon was the year before because he was number two in the draft.
No, he's in that draft.
It was Saquon two. Sam Darnold went three.
Okay. Oh, so I have the order wrong. Okay. So Saquon two, Darnold three. I'm doing it off the top of my head. So four is Browns, Denzel Ward. So you took a quarterback at one. You weren't going to take one at four. So that's Denzel Ward. Five, I believe, is Bradley Chubb.
It is.
So that's the Broncos. You know who the Broncos had that prevent? By the way, he is less than 2 hours from. He was less than 2 hours from their practice facility in Laramie. That is not far. They should have seen him 1,000 times. Elway was running the operation at that time. Case Keenum was the quarterback of the Denver Broncos that prohibited them from taking Josh Allen. Think about that. What if? If you go Elway, Manning, Allen. And then I think it's the Colts with Quentin Nelson. Is that right?
It is right.
Maybe. So think about that.
Maybe.
Who did the Colts have?
Was that Philip Rivers?
They still would have had Luck. They still would have had Andrew Luck.
Okay.
Because Andrew Luck retired that camp.
Oh.
So that's why they didn't take it.
Maybe the Broncos were gun shy on tall, big armed quarterbacks after Brock Osweiler and Paxton Lynch.
Could have been, but like, my gosh. I mean, that was kind of like, I always used to say that about Thad, how they missed on Trey Burke. Like, if anybody was going to know how good Trey Burke was, it should have been Ohio State. And that's what I always say about Josh. It's like, if anyone was going to know how good he was, it should have been Denver. He's right up the road. I mean, it's just straight north. It's nothing. So, yeah, it was cool to see him operate. And by the way, and we'll get into this coming up next, the Browns operated pretty well offensively. The thing I was most curious about, other than the quarterbacks, I'll give you my full review of that, but was also the offensive line. We'll get into that and what we saw there coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, whew, just to name a few, live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny skies are here for your Friday. Yeah, ending the week with some nice weather. Highs around 81. For your Saturday, increasing clouds with spotty showers and storms popping up in the afternoon and evening. Highs right around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. As always, we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. Joint practices yesterday down in Cincinnati and up in Cleveland. Let's start with the Browns. This was fun. A lot of juice to it. I thought both teams competed really hard, really fairly. Never really got out of control. A little bit here and there, but nothing really. Just kind of what you'd expect. Looked like two teams that were getting used to, finally excited to hit each other. Todd Monken was available post-practice yesterday and had some thoughts on the joint practice.
God, was that a lot of fun. Holy it's had fun to compete against someone else. Their guys, our guys, got a lot of respect for the Bills. It got a little edgy, but not over the top. And that's exactly what you're looking for. Guys want to compete, right? Got a lot of pride in the way they perform. And I thought our guys, I can only speak to one side, obviously the field I was on, but it was awesome. And commend the Bills and our guys for, like I said, taking it to the line, but not going over the line.
Here's Todd. He was on the offensive side, obviously calling all of the plays. Defensive side, I talked about a little bit of that with Allen, but here was Todd Monken on his offense's performance yesterday against the Bills.
It was fine. There was, I mean, do you like to turn it over in the red zone? No. Do you like to miss an open touchdown? No. But again, we got a lot of good work going against someone different, different looks, right? So that was really good. I'll have to look at the film. The one thing I would say, maybe it was just me, it didn't look like we were out of place. It looked like we belonged. That's all we wanted to see, right? Do we belong? I mean, does our first 11 give us a chance to move the ball and score? And I felt that way today.
That was really it. And I know some folks have been critical about that last line from Todd there about, you know, I just wanted to see that we belong. This team won 8 games the last 2 years. They were going against a team that can win the Super Bowl. So that's what I was curious about. Can this offensive line, which is brand new, can it hold up? Can it create running lanes? By the way, no Quinshon Judkins. He was not at practice yesterday for the Browns. So they missed, you know, their home run hitter is going to be a big part of their offense. Didn't have him. I thought, what I wanted to see was, can the offensive line protect? Because at times the Browns defensive line has wrecked some practices, and could the offensive line protect? And they did. They did a pretty good job. I thought both quarterbacks had really good days. There was a stretch in the first half of practice where Deshaun Watson looked like Deshaun Watson from 6 years ago. He just looked spectacular. And I think it was probably the best series of plays that he's ever had as a Cleveland Brown. He had a couple of great practices in the last couple of weeks, but this was different. He was just ripping it, man. He had a ball to Casey Concepcion on a go that he dropped in a bucket, hit him another one on a big corner, a big over that he hit right in stride. The deep ball to Concepcion was one that we've been waiting for Deshaun to throw, and he finally threw it, and he put it right on the screws. So that gave me a lot of confidence in terms of what that can be. Shadur was really strong as well. He got better as the practice went along. I thought that Deshaun had one really brutal pick where he just didn't see the linebacker and threw it right to him. It was just, and other than that, the thing though that you jump out at watching this, and this is why I think Monk's on a little bit of a time clock here, Shadur and Deshaun split the first team reps. Josh Allen got all the reps. So in a way, you need to get this going so that one of these guys feels like they start to have the answers to the test. Not saying either one's going to be Josh Allen, but you do need to go on this, I think, so that all of that 2 minute, all of that red zone work goes to one guy.
And Josh Allen probably doesn't need all the reps. Your quarterbacks do need all of the reps.
Josh wanted them.
Yeah.
He wanted them because it was, you know, real football.
When I heard Todd Monken's comments at first about, it's fine, want to be belong.
Yeah.
At first I was taken back and I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Mm-hmm. But then I thought about it more and I'm like, they're playing the Buffalo Bills. Yep. And the Buffalo Bills are a team that I believe heading into this year, their thought as a team and an organization is Super Bowl or bust.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the Cleveland Browns, yeah, you want to show that you belong. Playing against a team like that, it's not like they're saying, man, I just wanted to show we belonged against the Carolina Panthers.
No.
Or even worse, showing we belonged against the Arizona Cardinals. But this is the Buffalo Bills, so it's a little different there, I believe, with Todd's comments. At first, I was like, whoa, wait a second. But then, yeah, this is the Buffalo Bills. This is the upper echelon. This is the team you want to be hanging in with.
Yeah. You're not there yet. Like, you're trying to get there. You're not there yet.
And the discourse online for me, as I was scrolling through X yesterday and watching tons of videos, how good, Bo, did KC look yesterday? Because that's all that was my feed, was just KC has the Bills on their heels. It's end arounds to him, screen passes to him, over the top. Obviously, everyone saw the clip of Deshaun dropping the dime to him over the cross in the middle. But how good did KC look yesterday?
So he's blown up the last 2 weeks. Denzel Boston was probably the story of the first 2 weeks of camp, and then KC is blown up the last 2 weeks. His ability to get separation at the snap is elite. So they run him in a lot of different ways. He's one of those guys who you run a tunnel screen with and he can go to the barn with it, but he can get separation anytime he wants. He gets separation off the line of scrimmage anytime he wants. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know necessarily that the Browns are going to win the AFC North, but I do think if you're a Browns fan out there, this is going to be a really fun team to watch. And it's also a place that hopefully one of these two quarterbacks ends up being the dude. But if one of them isn't, it is going to be a place, or if neither one of them is, it is going to be a place where you paratroop a quarterback into it next year, a la Minnesota, a la Seattle. You drop a quarterback into it, and you've got all sorts of things to work with. I mean, Spencer Fano was incredible at left tackle yesterday. Like, just incredible.
Yeah,
like,
I heard people raving.
He looks every bit like the franchise left tackle you want somebody to be. And he's got the makeup of him where his give a damn is off the charts. So they maybe didn't have that with Jedrick Wills. They had it with Spencer Fano. He has the talent and then the give a damn to be great, like really wants to be. I think the offensive line with Fano leading, it's going to be a big part of it. And then you got a stud in Judkins, and now you have really four really good wide receivers, and their tight ends aren't even really fully formed. Like, Harold Fannin hasn't yet really taken off in practice the way, a little bit of a slow start. He was banged up. But with Boston, Concepcion, and then Bond and Judy, you have four legit. And then Wallace is going to make this team too. So, I mean, you have four legit weapons in the passing game that they haven't had probably since Odell and Jarvis and all of that situation. They haven't anything like that. Concepcion, there's a little Steve Smith to him. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of...
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got kind of that. Like, he's got that explosiveness to him. It was really cool to see. And I thought I thought really the big takeaway for me was just that the Browns offensive line was fine. They were fine. They were creating holes. They were protecting the quarterbacks. I think both quarterbacks had moments. I thought Deshaun's highs were higher, but he just had the one miss, and it was a bad read. He just threw it right to the linebacker. But other than that, he really was ripping it.
So, and I think Todd afterwards said the starters probably aren't going to play Saturday against the Bills. He said now some of the young guys might get in there. That's not great for Shador. And I would think this QB competition is pretty much over. Like, we don't need to keep this going.
I don't think I'm with you, but you know, yesterday he split the reps between both of them right down the middle. I mean, it was even. It was Shador and Deshaun split even. So I'm not sure exactly. And this was supposed to be a Deshaun day. I mean, Thursday was a Deshaun day, so he kind of went off the script on that and he split them even. So it sounds like he's going to play Shador for the entire first half on Saturday, and then still play Watson in the third quarter. And then, you know, from that point, I'm interested. He did have some interest. I'm curious how they manage all of this, because they have Talon Green too, who I know Todd likes a lot. And then he threw a touchdown yesterday, which we haven't seen him do much, but he's got a big arm and he's 6'5" and runs 4.3. So like there's some toolsy stuff with him that I would like to see maybe get developed a little bit. I think there's a potential for that just as a weapon. But yeah, I think by and large, you know, whether they win 7 games or 6 or 10 or whatever, I think it's going to be more fun than it was last year. Like, I know that it's going to be more fun because they have weaponry. Defensively, it's so hard because Carson Schlesinger hasn't been there at all. I mean, he's missed 4 weeks of camp now, hasn't really done anything. Everything that I'm hearing is that it's nothing serious, that they're just doing it out of an abundance of caution. But I do think at some point he needs to start practicing. Tyson Campbell's been kind of hit or miss here or there. And then a lot of their defensive tackles, Malik Collins hasn't participated yet at all. They did get Mike Hall back yesterday in the middle of their defensive line. So obviously he's a game wrecker when he's locked in. He's about as good as it gets. So, yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be a very interesting to see like the timeline on when Todd does this. And I mean, he's been around these guys for 6 months. Like he knows. I'm sure he knows. There's no way he's completely undecided. You're just taking the good versus the other versus the bad versus the other. And which one do we think is his best chance to win? So is it Sunday? Is it Monday? At some point, it does have to happen. Like we've seen a lot. We're 4 weeks of camp. We're 6 months of being around him. Like it's time to get him. And it was alarming. It was so noticeable yesterday because Josh Allen got, I would say, probably 40 reps himself, and the Browns reps were split. So you're missing, somebody's missing out. And that's something that I think Todd wants to get remedied as quick as possible. My hunch is by the time they practice next week, it'll be all sorted out. Tim May in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends right here on the
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The best hair on the air. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Friday at 10:30, we talked to our good buddy Tim May, the Tim May Show on Fan Stream Sports on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Did you ever cover high school football coming up as a journalist?
Oh, hell yeah. My first, the first football game I ever covered in my life for a newspaper was Lufkin News, was Dieball versus Groveton in Texas. And then I started covering Lufkin the next year because I became the sports editor of the paper at the age of 19. But yeah, and my lead was the Groveton Indians massacred the Dieball Lumberjacks 35-0 last night. And my bless her heart, who loved me so much, she goes, Tim, I'm really proud of you, but don't you think that your first paragraph was a little harsh? So, and I went, I thought it was genius, you know? Hey, that was back in the day, if you remember correctly. Back when you
I do.
Anyway, and I just, you know, when you first start out, cliche is the name of the game, baby.
Yeah, it's funny. So high school football starts in earnest tonight throughout Ohio.
Yeah.
And we had some games last night. And so you start to get the feels for all of it. And I know you've lived in other places, although I've been here a long time and grew up in Texas, and I've lived all over the place. I just think that I've said this about Ohio. I think Ohio probably does Friday, Saturday, and Sunday better than any state, in that
yeah.
Their Friday night lights are as good as Texas in a lot of places. They're as good as Georgia, mm-hmm. Florida, any of the places I've been. Their Saturdays are as good as anywhere I've been. And their Sundays. Mm-hmm. Browns-Bengals games are pretty damn awesome. Like, they really do check every single box around here, and it really starts on Friday nights.
Yeah, but, you know, Texas, you got to remember, I mean, Southwest Conference, the core was in the state of Texas, you know, back when I was growing up. And and then, of course, the Cowboys and then the Houston Oilers. But, you know, you got the Cowboys and the Texans down there. But, yeah, I mean, it's as good as anywhere else. The crowds, you know, I'm not sure Texas high school football, with a few exceptions now in certain areas around the metro areas of Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, Austin and San Antonio, I'm not sure they draw the crowds they used to draw, but, you know, Lufkin, where I grew up in East Texas, you know, they built an 11,000-seat stadium in 1973. You know what I mean? So, and Friday Night Lights, and Lufkin was a town when I was growing up, about 28, 30,000. Now it's about 35. It hadn't grown a lot, but football's still huge. I don't know. I would probably still put Texas on maybe a level ahead of Ohio in that regard of the people who show up. But no, you're right, dude. Bradley High School is right around the corner, about a mile from my house and over in the Hilliard. And I've walked over there a few times through the woods to get to the games. Now there's a housing development between us. It's made it easier. But Centennial High School, I'm looking out on their practice field right now from our the Tim May Show studios. I got Dylan Davis in here. We're recording today's show. I'm taking a respite from that to talk with you. But yeah, we've watched them, you know, put together a team through the preseason. And, you know, city schools sometimes have a little bit more of a challenge from a facility standpoint than the suburban schools. But, yeah, man, I think suburban high school football, especially around Columbus, is as good as it's ever been, if not the best.
I think it's the best it's ever been. When you have, I mean, even in the 20 years that I've been covering it, Tim, the idea that you could have multiple public school teams with incredible elite facilities. And I said this, I encourage the audience off the top. I'm like, if it's been a while since you've been to the high school team in your town's game, go. Just go. And what you'll see
pregame.
It's the last, I really believe this. I think it's one of the last communal things we do.
Yeah,
truly. Where 5,000-6,000 people show up in a town and we all kind of row in the same direction. Like your town may have a 4th of July thing or you may have a big Memorial Day or Labor Day thing. But every Friday night, a lot of these suburban communities and a lot of, I mean, even the city, like all get together and we all go. That's what we do on a Friday night. You go watch a high school football game.
Follow the team bus.
Yeah. Right.
Hickory. But no, you're exactly right. You know, vacate the town. You know, that was what's funny because, not funny, ha-ha, but interesting because Hilliard, you know, when we first moved to Hilliard, my wife and I, back in 85, they had one high school. And then they got a second one. And I can't remember the coach at the time at, it's now Hilliard Davidson, but it used to be just the high school. But, I walked into the end zone when they had their little stadium right in the middle of downtown there and watched games. Walk in like the late second. My point was there were a lot of people there who were against having a second high school because it was going to dilute the talent. And now, of course, they've got three. And there's probably talk about four. But you look at Dublin. If Dublin had just one high school, what kind of like football teams they'd have? But it creates obviously opportunities for others. But like, you know, Brock Boyd. Why is Brock Boyd? Why is he competitive? Why is he so damn good? Why do people gush about him? You know, Jermaine Matthews. Yesterday, I'm going to have that little clip on my podcast here in a minute, just talking about Brock Boyd. He couldn't even get the words out except how good he is, you know what I mean? And but he played for South Lake Carroll, which opted not to, you know, unlike Frisco, which has got like six or seven high schools now, you know, the South Lake Carroll area decided to stay with one high school so they could dominate. And, for example, so that's what you run into down in Texas is these suburban schools that have just exploded size-wise. But yeah, it's cool, man. You think about how good some of these teams could be if there was just one high school in town, like Pickerington, you know?
It'd God, yeah. Olentangy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good Lord, like all the state championships won up there. Yeah, every one of them you could play that game with.
I may name every one of them before we're done. Go ahead now.
You've been at the availabilities as you always are. One thing I always like to do in the availabilities is I always like keep notes of guys that people bring up their names without being asked. So when I in the first 3 days of camp, the name that kept being brought up without being asked was Earl Little Jr. And so if I hear it a bunch, I'm like, okay, then he's a dude. Who is it? Who are some names that you're hearing that are just kind of being volunteered?
Without a doubt, Kari Wilder, you know, a freshman defensive end. I mean, they, you know, when so many people are talking about him, that means he's making an impact, like you're talking about, right? And yeah. Dude, they're, you know, you might as well play freshman now and early softs as soon as you can, because they have five to play five. Not that the really good ones will be there more than three. As Sean Springs once said to me, walking off the field at the Rose Bowl, I didn't tell him to redshirt me in my first year. That was his fourth year, but his third year playing. But the bottom line is, there are a lot of guys, several guys like that. But that's definitely a name that's come up in the last couple of weeks. It seems to be on everybody's lips. And just the depth on that defensive front had to come around, right? And I think they're getting it in all kinds of ways. And then you look, for example, Matt Patricia had his defensive player of the practice or whatever. What was it, yesterday? And it was Edrick Houston. You look at it, just the picture of Edrick Houston standing next to Matt Patricia, he's like trimmed up, looks ready to rock and roll this year. This time a year ago, he was dealing with that hyperextended knee, suffering almost the first play of practice, and he wasn't quite the guy he wanted to be until maybe later in the year. But that's kind of the guys that you're going to see bubble up as this season ensues, but especially – those guys have got to really come online by the time they go to Texas, you know? And so there are several guys like that. And Isaiah West, you know, the two running backs, we were writing off almost Bo Jackson at the beginning of camp because Isaiah West was going in ahead of him, it looked like, with first-team reps. But even Isaiah West is gushing about Bo Jackson, you know, and how good he's looked, along with Peyton Pierce and others who have talked about Bo Jackson and his make-you-miss ability now and stuff. So yes, there are a lot of guys you could talk about right now, Bo, who could play a big role. But if there's that many guys, you got to figure the ball is going to get parceled out, and it's going to be hard for one guy to just really, you know, go crazy. Except they are going to get the ball in number four's hands.
I think they'll find four. Hey, first time since 2015, an SEC team did not get an AP preseason number one vote. Not a single one from an SEC team. When we did 20 most interesting, I thought Georgia was probably the best of the bunch, but a lot of people think Texas might be there too. We'll see. What would your top five have looked like?
I would have Ohio State where it is, number one, but it'd be a debate in my head between Ohio State and Oregon. I think Oregon's got a great roster, but just what we were just talking about, I think Ohio State's got a hell of a roster, and you haven't even really seen the depth of it yet, at least the public hasn't. And then I'd have a hard time not having Indiana in my top three or four, only because I think they've gotten better in a lot of other areas, and I'm curious about Josh Hoover, you know, the transfer quarterback, because I knew Mendoza was going to be pretty good this time a year ago. I was gushing about Indiana from the start. Notre Dame doesn't play anybody, so... Nope. And if their roster is as good as everybody says it is, then they deserve probably in the top five because, you know, they have a good chance of going 12-0. And then six, five, you know, I don't know. There'd be a big debate in my head between several teams. But if you had to push me, I'd probably say Georgia because I know Georgia's got a hell of a roster and they're laying in the weeds. I mean,
they are.
Nobody's talking. Dude, when no SEC team gets a first-place vote, even the people in the SEC are doubting them. You know what I mean? The SEC area, territory, the voters down there. So I think that's going to be a curious season to watch. But I'm telling you, Phil Steele said it a couple of weeks ago on my podcast, and he said probably with you, but the team he's really got his eye on the SEC is Alabama because they can't be a lot worse than they were last year, and they weren't that bad last year. They just weren't up to snuff.
No, if he gets quarterback situated, then
they could. Offensive line, that's where they were really hurting last year, was offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff, buddy. When's your podcast drop, buddy? When's it drop today?
As soon as me and Dylan get back, double down with Dylan Davis, as soon as we get back to business here, probably in about an hour.
All right. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. Thanks for your time, buddy,
as always. Have a good time at any kind of high school football game tonight, brother. See you next time.
Absolutely. You can't help but have a good time at a high school football game. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and friends right here on the
replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
The JT Barrett Comeback Special. It's Ohio State and Penn State from 2017.
Hear Buckeye replay this Saturday at 4 p.m. on The Fan. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
After putting up with Dom to Barry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Friday edition. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So the Cincinnati Bengals are playing the Chicago Bears Sunday night at 7, and they had joint practices yesterday in advance of that game. After the joint practices, Joe Burrow had some media availability, and he talked about how this year's the only thing that matters.
I'm trying to put it out into the world. I'm trying to manifest it. I'm trying to show our guys the urgency that I have and that I want us to have as an organization to go and make it happen. You know, you can keep pushing it down the road, or you can talk about it now and say this is the year. And, you know, I'm tired of saying next year, next year, next year. This is it. You know, your life is too short to keep pushing things down the road, and I'm trying to instill some urgency and some intensity in everybody to go and be great every day and try to go make it happen.
Do you feel like it's got to be now or never?
That's how I'm treating it, for sure. That's how I'm treating it.
Thing or not a thing.
Well, the now or never follow-up is kind of silly. It's not now or never. I mean, it's certainly, though, now. And the window with this roster is probably 2 years. It's probably 2 years where you still have Burrow in his prime, and his prime is going to last as long as he can stay healthy. I mean, he could have another decade. But where you have Chase, Higgins, defensive line, every box checked, it's this year, probably next year. You got a 2 year window where you need to go win the Super Bowl with Joe Burrow with this group, with Ja'Marr Chase at his peak of his powers, T. Higgins at the peak of his powers. It's this year and next year. And I love Joe's approach to all of this. And I know you're with me on this, Bake. I think they are an incredible value as a Super Bowl champion. Incredible value. I think their roster is as good as any in the AFC. I would put them only behind the Rams and I guess the Seahawks a little bit, but I think that they're right there, and I think they're a better roster than the Bills. I think they're a better roster than the Chiefs, than the Ravens, and everybody. So just go do it is kind of the job now at that point. So I don't, it's not now or never, but it is now and next year, kind of in this window.
And it makes it easy for the Bengals because everyone in that locker room knows, I mean, this is our year. That's how everyone in the locker room should already be thinking. So I love Joe putting the urgency on them. From the Bengals' point of view, I would say, yes, Joe, we obviously want to attack the Super Bowl this year, but we can't have 10 games of Super Bowl window being open and then injury hit and Super Bowl window is closed for this season. He talks about, you know, not wanting to wait till next year, but his injuries have been a reason for that. I mean, he's missed time in 3 of the last 4 seasons. Every time he goes down, what do Bengals fans have to say? Hopefully next year we can get 17 games out of Joe. And part of that is the O-line, and that's not his fault, but part of it is, you know, he's been getting banged up every single season. Can he stay healthy for 17 games this year? I hope so, because then they'll be pushing for the playoffs. But if you're not staying healthy, this Bengals team can't do it without him.
Well, a lot of people were saying this was Burrow putting pressure on the front office. Do you take it that way at all?
Not at all. I think that the front office has done everything that Joe has asked.
I kind of agree.
I mean, he wanted Higgins, Chase, and at the time, Trey Hendrickson all signed. They did. They probably should have done an extension, probably should have done it sooner on all of them, would have saved money, but they eventually did. Look what they did this year on the defensive line. Like, they've done their part. Now it's up to them to stay healthy. I don't think Burrow, I think the two people who are under the most pressure in the NFL this year, though, by far, are Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. I think the most pressure in Cincinnati is actually on Zach.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think it's on Joe. I think in both the Baltimore and Buffalo situation, you would say to yourself, those two guys, because I'm guessing they had a hand in naming the new head coach. Cincinnati, they can still blame it on Zach one more time. So I think the Cincinnati pressure is on Zach, not Joe.
I saw this from Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports. BYU is introducing various new fan experiences this season for home games. For $800+, you can get a press box pregame meal and views of the stadium. If you want to attend Kalani Sitake's postgame presser, $650. Pregame on-field photo shoot before the Notre Dame game, $500. BYU trying to make money like everyone else. Thing or not a thing?
Smart thing. Found money. It would irritate the heck out of me if I'm at a Kalani Sitake press conference and I've got a bunch of fans in there trying to ask questions or boo questions that are tough. I mean, that would be really ridiculous if they do that. So hopefully they have them in like a pen or something like off to the side so they're not like in the middle of all of it. But look, it's found money. That's what this is. Here are things that we can offer that we can now charge for. What can we charge for them? I don't know. Let's throw it out there and see. And away you go. So, I think you have to do these things in the current climate of the sport.
Yeah, I think it's an amusement park. That's what it is. Yeah. It feels like you're paying for different things and different experiences. Are you getting the fast pass or not when you go to the Ohio State games? That's what we're getting to here. And this is what makes me laugh. Like, when I hear them being able to go to Kalani Sitake's press conference for $650, in my mind, it's... You're paying $650 to hear, how did the team play tonight, Kalani? And then that answer. Like, for me, not the best bargain. But also, I think they might need to institute maybe a breathalyzer for the fans before they walk in there.
Well, it is BYU, so you might be okay on the breathalyzer.
You're right. That's a safe spot for it.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, Bo, you've been in those press conferences at Ohio State. There's not a lot of room, and there's people running around everywhere. You get 20 fans in there. Nobody's going to be able to move. Somebody's going to be getting hit in the head with a camera.
No, there's not enough room for the media in the Ohio State media room. I assume it's the same place that they did it forever. I mean, there's no room to move in there. When they start bringing players in, you can't even operate.
Kelsey Mitchell officially holds the WNBA record for the most consecutive 20-point games in league history. Mitchell is the first player to top 20 points in 21 consecutive games. She broke Asia Wilson's previous record of 20 straight 20-plus point games. She did it in just the first half last night. She scored 21 points before halftime of the Indiana Fever's game with the Dallas Wings. Unfortunately, Mitchell's team and Fever lost 91-85. She scored 37 points, though, in the game, tying her career high. She also reached the 900-point mark for the season on Thursday, just the fourth WNBA player in history to do so. Mitchell is now averaging 24.6 points per game this season, second most in the WNBA behind Asia Wilson. Thing or not a thing?
She's a stud. Just is. Always has been. She can score the basketball. And I think what's cool is she's having this incredible season, and the Fever are like in the middle of all of this culture war stuff and not effects. Like, they just keep winning. She's keep averaging 25 a game. I'll see you next time out. Like, just water off a duck's back. Really cool, and she's been fun to watch all the way through.
Yeah, she's on, like, one of the greatest scoring runs of any Ohio State basketball player, men's or women's, ever right now, and she's doing it at the highest level. And the best part, 37 points, but the Fever still lost. What a disappointing way to have the record broken, but a great night again for Kelsey.
Ohio State men's basketball team could soon be adding the final member to its 2026-27 roster. Lee, I believe it's Aaliyah, a 6'9" forward from Argentina, whom the Buckeyes have been targeting as an addition, posted about Ohio State on social media yesterday. So he shared a graphic from the Ohio State team shop with the caption, "Let's go Buckeyes," on his Instagram story. He also shared a tweet on Thursday with the words "Al Finn," which translate to "at last," and it had hearts in Ohio State colors. Ohio State has not officially signed Aaliyah, but as of Thursday night, he is listed in Ohio State's student directory. Thing or not a thing?
I don't know, because I've never seen this dude play. So I don't know. I can't possibly tell you if it's a thing or not. If he's maybe he's a bench guy, a rotation guy, who knows? Maybe he's a stud. I don't know. I'm not watching kids from Argentina. It'd be impossible for me to know. The way you presented it to me, Bake, leads me to believe that it is a big deal. But that's probably a question for, like, Jardy.
Yeah, the research I did told me that he's playing professional basketball in Argentina and Spain. 6'9", plays more than like a 4 than a 5, but I'm more than welcome for any good European players here on this basketball team for Ohio State. We have enough players that I already can barely pronounce their names. I can do Lealia.
And this is why this is why the football thing happened this week, by the way. This is why. Because of professional European players, South American players playing college basketball. This is how they lose in court on the NBA guys who play G League, and this is how they lose in court on the NFL guys who are at training camp. Because it's all the same. What's the difference if it's here or if it's overseas? That's the problem. So this is, again, the unintended consequences of it all. Two-a-days in the final hour. We are in the NFC North. This is a banger of a division. We will do the Lions. We will do the Bears. Former Bears great Tom Thayer will join us at 11:30. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. The Cleveland Guardians won their series with San Francisco, beating the Giants 5-2 yesterday. The Guards head west to start a series in Colorado against the Rockies at 8:40 tonight. Joey Cantillo versus Tanner Gordon, a pitching matchup. The Cincinnati Reds gave up 6 unearned runs in the 9th yesterday. They fall to the St. Louis Cardinals 10-9. The Reds heading to Arizona to face the Diamondbacks at 9:40 this evening. Coverage over on the Fan 2 begins at 9:10. The Cleveland Cavaliers and guard James Harden have agreed to a 3-year, $97 million extension. That pushes Harden's career earnings to $414 million. The Columbus Blue Jackets announced that goaltender Elvis Merzlikins is out indefinitely after undergoing shoulder surgery. Roosters has given away 12 Ultimate Buckeye experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register right now at roosterswings.com.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
I had mentioned with Tim Mahan several times this week that the last time the SEC did not get a single first-place vote in the AP poll was 2015, and I've mentioned several times that that was the year the Ohio State was a unanimous preseason number one. What I didn't know, and what Bob told me via text, was that in his research, that was the only time in the preseason AP poll that there was a unanimous number one, was 2015 Ohio
State. Really?
Which blew my mind. That like 95 Nebraska, 06 Ohio State, some of those Miami teams, the USC teams with Pete Carroll in them, like none of those were unanimous. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, Miami, you would have thought in that 01, 02 season where Ohio State beat them in the national championship, or the 02 season. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What about some of Saban's teams?
None of those teams were unanimous either. Yeah, just 15 Ohio State. Pretty wild that that wasn't the case. I mean, even if you go back, like, even like 93, the year that Florida State finally won it, like that was their super team preseason, that was the team to be it. But they weren't. It was always something that was spread around a little bit. So interesting nugget there that was the only time that was the case in the preseason. All right. Final hour of the program. Time for two-a-days in the NFC North. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present two-a-days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? I doubt it.
We are in the NFC North. So we went from like the dregs of the NFC and the NFC South to another massive division here where you have a bunch of teams that have all been really good in recent years. And probably the standard bearer in the last half decade or so has been the Detroit Lions, who were built with Chris Spielman at the top, with John Dorsey in certainly an advanced scouting role as one of the heads of the scouting department, and then with Dan Campbell and his personality. And people made fun of it and doubted it and eating kneecaps and all of the things that Dan Campbell preached, but it all worked. I mean, they were mocked for drafting a tight end and an off-ball linebacker. It all worked. Like, it's worked. Now, the question is, did they miss their window? And when I look at this team, I think that they did. I think that the window was missed a little bit by them, and I think injuries undid them. They probably should have played for a Super Bowl in one of those years where they had those incredible records with all of this thing rolling. But there is a changing of the guard there a little bit. David Montgomery is out. Taylor Decker is out. Alex Anzalone is out. These are guys who are kind of linchpins of their run that they had. They did bring in replacements. Isaiah Pacheco comes in from Kansas City. I think he'll do very well. There is a change of pace. But you are seeing this roster turn over a little bit, and they're going to be competitive. They're going to be in the mix. But in terms of like winning the NFC, to me, this feels like they're kind of in a little bit of a transition on the fly here, guys.
It kind of feels like that, doesn't it? Like, I still believe in this team, but they could slowly slip into rebuilding really soon. And maybe they're doing a great job of tinkering on the fly. They had to get rid of a couple wide receivers, but they've drafted some good ones here. Tesla has been good. Jameson Williams seems to have something there. They don't really seem to have a big receiver, though. Maybe that's because they have Sam Laporta at the tight end position, and he can fill that role, but he's had some trouble staying healthy.
Is that
whatnot.
Your lean? Is that a lean for franchise great, you dad? They don't have a big receiver.
I'm actually not going there.
Oh, you're
I
not
thought
going
I
there.
Was going there, but yeah. I'm not.
I might be going there.
yeah.
It's actually hard to believe I'm not going a certain running back either, and that's one of my favorite of all time.
Of all time, right, yeah.
I love Dan Campbell, but he can be a little reckless sometimes, and it just... Gosh, I still believe in this team, but they're right there teetering on the edge.
And the Dan Campbell thing's interesting because when they went 15-2 2 years ago, like every risk he took was pretty much hitting. And then when you're the risky coach and you aren't getting wins, you get put in a really dangerous scenario where last season they finished 9-8, missed the playoffs. So they start analyzing the risk you take a lot closer when you aren't making the playoffs. When you're winning, every risk is a win. When you're losing, every risk is a miss. And that's the hard part about Dan Campbell coming into this year, is the pressure's really mounting. If they can miss the playoffs again, then they're really going to start analyzing what he's doing on third and fourth down.
I think you're in a transition. I think they're going to try to kind of retool this on the fly and try to get younger. They got kind of expensive. They had to let some guys go, and they're kind of in a position of transition to try to get back. My hunch is, as long as Spielman's there, that Dan Campbell is going to be the face of the Lions for a long time. Like, to me, this feels like a Tomlin-type run. He's young, he's energetic, he's the face of the franchise in every way. I think they'll just draft guys that fit his DNA. They're so aligned. So I know Spielman. I know Dorsey really well. Those guys are cut from the same cloth. Same dudes. And my guess is Campbell's a dude, too. So I think it all is kind of lines up in terms of this is what the Detroit Lions are. And so I think they'll just draft around it. And Dorsey's great at drafting. He's great at identifying talent. Coach grade for the Detroit Lions for Dan Campbell, Bake.
So I've given this a B+, and I love Dan Campbell. And I think the players love Dan Campbell, too. However, he's a riverboat gambler, man. And sometimes when you live by that sword, you also die by that sword, and it can be pretty gruesome. And I think he just needs to tone. Maybe you can't. Maybe that's just what makes you so great. But I question a lot of times the things he does going for it. So I can't go A+ or an A on Dan, even though I love him.
See, I love Dan Campbell, too. I've got him as an A- here because I think he's a true culture builder. I mean, he turned around one of the worst franchises of the past 25 years in the Detroit Lions and immediately instilled the culture. And what you were talking about, Bo, is spot on. Like, it's from top down. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've clearly shown everyone what their identity is, and it feels like he's doing a good job of getting that across to the players. But the buy-in's only there when you're winning. If it rolls off the rails, then it's harder to have that culture stay.
I'm going to go. I really want to go A because of everything that you guys have both said. I do think it's probably B+ because I think where he's at now is he has to prove that he can hire coordinators. Can you hire coordinators? Like, they had Ben Johnson. He was elite. Like, that's been a step back without him last year. So he's got to prove that he can hire coordinators to handle his business. I mean, he's called plays at times. Like,
I think he is the play caller right now.
Is he still? Yeah, man's got to know his limitations.
Aaron Glenn, too.
Yeah, Glenn, too, with the Jets. So they lost both coordinators at the same time. Uniform grade on the Lions, Bake.
I think this is probably right now a B or B minus, but this is another one that should be an A. Just go back to your old school uniforms, your Barry Sanders era uniforms.
I've got this one down as a B plus for me. I don't hate the retooled uniforms they've come out with. They've got a really sharp gray one with a really nice bright blue helmet that I love. I think the blue and the silver goes really well together. I think it's a pretty good take on what the old ones used to be. I think their blackout uniforms look good with the bright blue helmet. I like these ones.
Yeah, they did about as close as you can be to the Berries without wearing the Berries. They're very close. They actually went back to the Honolulu blue, which is their color, so they brought that back. They look very similar. They do have the Berry Thanksgiving ones as an alternate, which are really, really slick. Yeah, I think this is a B plus, A minus type spot from a uniform perspective. They've had some bad ones, but they're on the right track now, at least paying some homage. One franchise great you could add to this team, Bake.
So it's crazy that you mentioned, I said something about big receivers, yep. And that's not where I was going. And my favorite NFL player of all time that's not a Cleveland Brown is Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think their running back and receiver rooms are pretty good. You know what room I don't think is very great on this team? The cornerback room.
Mm.
So give me Dick Night Train Lane.
I was hoping somebody would do that.
I'm so glad you went there, babe, because those are the two names I had circled. Was Dick Night Train Lane, because nothing would make me happier than getting any of the commentators to be able to use his name on a big play call, because Night Train Lane is one of the greatest nicknames in NFL history. But I'm going with Megatron. His career was cut short anyway. He didn't play long enough. I'll take a couple more years of some good red zone jump balls in the end zone, picking off players left and right.
Both Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, who are both first ballot gold jackets, and I'm with you. Barry's one of those guys that if you didn't see him play, it's hard to describe it. If you weren't there to live through it, it's hard to describe his greatness.
I don't know if I ever saw him get tackled by one human being.
No. No. And he was kind of a one-man show. Like, they didn't have a lot around him, and they still got to an NFC Championship. I think it's Calvin Johnson, though. I think you put Calvin Johnson with Jameis Williams and Amon Ross St. Brown and look out. That's a problem in every way. But, yeah, they have some good ones to choose from. Franchise tier for the Lions, Bake.
So this is kind of hard for me because I feel like they're maybe in the best run of their franchise history right now. But it's kind of teetering, and if I feel like this goes downhill, there's going to be a complete sweep of the front office, because I think probably these guys sometimes can wear on people and whatnot. Overall, throughout the history, like, they made Calvin Johnson retire early.
Mm-hmm.
They made Barry Sanders retire early. And their lows have been really, really low. I give this franchise a D. Maybe that's harsh, but
that's pretty harsh. For me, I mean, if you had asked me 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I would have grouped them right in with my own Cleveland Brownies as about the only other franchise that could compete with them with some of the embarrassing lows that we've had. But the past couple of years, I think their culture has really trended upwards. So I'm going to put them up to a C, and that's hoping that Dan Campbell can keep this thing rolling for now. But, I mean, you even think about Matthew Stafford. He was there for a long time with Megatron, and his best years in the NFL have been since he's left the Lions, and he was good at the Lions, but they were so dysfunctional that an all-time great, probably on a Hall of Fame trajectory quarterback, couldn't even lift them out of it. So for me, I'll keep him in the C.
I'm going to go C, too. I think, but the last 4 years gets them there, because otherwise they're a D, probably, maybe even an F. But I think they're C based on where they are right now. They have an identity. They're rowing in the same direction. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting, Bake?
I've got them as playoffs, but they're teetering on busting.
Yeah.
I've got them playoffs as well. I think but the division's tough. It is a tough division.
Yep, I think so too. I think they're a playoff team, and we'll see if they can live up to that standard. A team that won this division last year is the Chicago Bears. They are up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
Fan weather.
from the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny skies are here for your Friday. Yeah, ending the week with some nice weather. Highs around 81. For your Saturday, increasing clouds with spotty showers and storms popping up in the afternoon and evening. Highs right around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Bo could quit today and become the school drop offline coordinator. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Former Bears great Tom Thayer going to join us in 11 minutes from now on the Chicago Bears, and that's where we find ourselves in 20, rather in two-a-days. We just did the Detroit Lions. We're in the NFC North. Last year, the Bears 11-6. This was one I had. I had them as a playoff team last year. I just thought just too much talent and believed in Caleb Williams enough in the development, what Ben Johnson was doing as a play caller, that it would get there, and it got there in a big way. A right there on the precipice of playing for the NFC Championship, lost in a divisional round in a thrilling game to the Rams. Were incredible in the first round game as well. They have added to their roster. They're in a position because of just timing, right? They were in a position where, because they wanted to see what they had with Justin Fields and Carolina was desperate, they poached, and then they were bad again with Fields and ended up with Caleb Williams, who was the pick from Carolina, and the rest is history. So if, when you look up there, our lads too deep, there's no holes. There's nothing here. There's weapons everywhere. I love their draft pick of Dylan Thienemann, the safety out of Oregon, going at 25 overall. He's going to be a plug-and-play guy. They lost a couple guys. DJ Moore might end up being addition by subtraction if they can get healthy at wide receiver. Roma Dunzie is great. I think Luther Borden is a stud. He's out right now in preseason, but he's a guy that they're counting on in a big, big way. So I think when you look at the Chicago team, you say, is this a team that's ready to just take that next step and be a Super Bowl contender? They might not be all the way there yet, but I do think they will get there sooner rather than later. I mean, good Lord, just look at their tight end depth alone. Colston Loveland and Cole Kmet at tight end. I mean, it's crazy the amount of talent that they have there. The running back room, Manungai came along, Swift, Williams, the line up front. It's a ready-to-go team, man. It really is. And it's crazy because they have all this stuff off the field with the stadium and going to Indiana and all this stuff with Kevin Warren they're dealing with. And yet on the field, and maybe this is the best case they've ever had for probably the timing of the stadium, this is the best the Bears have been maybe since they were building the 85 Bears in terms of sustainability.
So, they had two of my favorite draft picks, and not last year's NFL draft, but the year before, and you mentioned them in Luther Burden and Kyle Manungai. I really wanted the Browns to draft Luther Burden when they took Schlesinger and Quinshon Judkins in that draft last year. Now, both of those picks looked good for the Browns, and now you've got Boston and Concepcion, but I thought Luther Burden was somebody who would have been great on the Browns, and Kyle Manungai is just a hammer at that running back position. I had a lot of questions about Caleb Williams, and I still do have a little bit, but one thing I don't have question about him anymore is he's an elite playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does things unconventional sometimes for quarterbacks, and he makes some wild mistakes sometimes. But that dude is an elite playmaker, I believe. Ben Johnson, is he a guy that can keep this run as a head coach? He's obviously very talented as a play caller, and I think Dan Campbell rubbed off on him a lot as far as getting the guys to follow me. Can he keep that going now in year two and beyond?
Yeah, it feels like if Caleb has last season again, they're a playoff lock, not ready to win the NFC. If he takes another step, then they're pushing for Cam win the NFC. And the end of their season last year was like some of the most fun NFL TV there was. They were winning in spectacular ways, and we'll see if they can carry that over into this year, or maybe Caleb just plays a little bit better and they don't get themselves into some of the trouble they were in late in games last year, but it was some special football.
I think Caleb Williams is an example of how lucky they were to land on Ben Johnson in year two, and how borderline they could have absolutely undercut his entire development had they waited any longer, or had they gone in a different direction. Because I think he could have got wrecked. Because there was times in year one as a rookie that he looked lost, totally lost. Last year, great coaching. He ends up, now the completion percentage isn't great. It's under 60%. But if he gets that to 65, which should happen in this offense, you want to talk about playmaking, 58%, but 39-42, 27 touchdowns and 7 picks. He also ran for 388. So you're talking about some big-time playmaking numbers from Caleb. And it's just a matter of they got the right coach in the right spot. And now this franchise is in a position to really build on something and be in the mix for a very, very long time with this group kind of all going together. Coach grade for Ben Johnson on the categories, Bake. What do you got?
I'm going to give him a B+. I thought he did good in his first year. He's a little weird, you know, taking his shirt off and flexing in front of all the guys. But if there was a little more here, maybe I could get him up to an A. But I have him at a B+. He did a good job in year one.
I was really impressed year one. I have him an A- just because of the development of Caleb. And that's one of the toughest things for a lot of coaches to do, especially in their first time being a head coach, is can you have this team rolling in the right direction? And then can you get your quarterback to take a step? And he had both. And so last year was really, really impressive. I'm expecting the exact same thing in year two for him.
So I think year one, it's an A+. But to your point, Bake, I have to see that he can maintain it. Like, I saw the impact Kevin Stefanski had year one as a play caller, but then from a leadership standpoint, the second year kind of got away from him a little bit. Can Ben Johnson deal with it if they get off to a slow start? What does that look like? Because I don't know what his makeup is yet. So I'm going to go B, but an A+ first year for him. But let's see what happens if there's some adversity this year. We'll see. Uniform grade on the Chicago Bears, which are largely untouched for 100 years.
I've never really loved the Chicago Bears uniform. However, as you mentioned, they're iconic, and they've largely not done anything to them. They've kept them the same, and I respect that. You know who it is when you see it. I give them a B.
I have it down as a B+. The tradition that's continued on, the C is iconic. They haven't touched him a lot, so that makes it even better. Even if I don't really love them as much, they get a little boost because it's been so long.
I think it's an A. I think it's an iconic look. You may not love the colors. You may not love this. I do think it's interesting that they never put like an actual bear on their uniform. Like, you're kind of a cool thing, and they've never done that. They've always just had the wishbone C, but it would all works. And when you see it, you see Butkus, you see Singletary, you see Peyton, you see all of them. They just look like the Chicago Bears. You know who they are, absolutely. All right, one franchise great you could add to this team.
God, there's so many good ones here that you could go with. However, the one thing I think this team is really lacking is a playmaker in the front seven on defense. So because of that, I'm going Brian Urlacher. He was a unicorn. He could do anything. He could come and rush the passer. He could go intercept to cover guys. And so I think it's Urlacher for me.
For me, it was also Urlacher. I think the offense has a ton of weapons. It would be nice to have Urlacher in the middle directing the entire defense because he'll make up for deficiencies across the board. Great leader. If I was to pick another one, it would be Sweetness. Throw him in there. They could use another running back.
Sweetness would be unbelievable. Now, Bake, you're not that much younger than me. It shows your guys' age. Like, you went middle linebacker, but you didn't go Singletary. And what are we doing?
Well, I mean, he was great, but I would have gone Butkus if I was going that kind of.
Well, you could do either one. They're both first ballot all-timers. Singletary was my guy. So, Mike Singletary wearing number 50 in the middle of this defense. They have Devin Bush. They signed from Cleveland. He'll look great. He's playing middle. I like Devin a lot. He's not Mike Singletary. So, but yes, on the defensive side, they've had a lot of them you could choose from. Franchise grade, S being the best, F the worst.
Can't coach them. Can't win with them, Bo.
It's amazing. Won't do it.
I've got the Bears again. Maybe I'm grading hard here, but I've got the Bears as a C. Like, they've been to Super Bowls. They've won. It's been a long time, though, since they've won one. And they're about to move to Indiana. I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah,
I've got them as a B-. They haven't been good in the past couple of decades, turning it around now a little bit. But they've been so average pretty much the majority of my lifetime. But there is history there, so they get a little bit of a boost for me.
Yeah, I think the history kind of lifts them to a C. And I think where we are right now probably lifts them too. Because I've always thought that this is one of the biggest underachieving franchises in the NFL. I mean, it's a Bears town. Chicago's a Bears town. And they have it to themselves. And it's football crazy. But the McCaskies and Hallis families always owned them. And so there's always a ceiling on how big that they can get on all this stuff. But they should be better than they are. I mean, they should be a gold standard. They should have no problem building a stadium. They should build it exactly where they want it. It's ridiculous that they're in this position that they're in. So, yeah, I think it probably is a C, although their history is more of an A-type history if you go all the way back. Win it all, playoffs, busting, or building for the Bears, Big?
I think they think win it all, and I think they should. I think this is a playoff team, though.
I think so, too. I'm in playoffs here. I think if Caleb takes a huge jump, maybe they could push for win it all, but I still think they're probably a year away.
Big, I think you said it. I think 100%. They think they can win it all. And I think they should think that. So I'm going to put them in the win-it-all category. Year three for Caleb. Like, they got no real holes. Let's go. But, yeah, I think they're a playoff team for sure. They're not going to be my pick to win the Super Bowl. But I think in their building, they probably think that they are. Tom Thayer, who actually won a Super Bowl in Chicago on one of the most colorful, coolest teams ever, the 85 Bears, will join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by KDHVAC, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's get some perspective on the Chicago Bears and the NFC North by a guy who ought to know. He spent his life in the region, certainly, and he joins us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. He's color analyst on the Bears Radio Network and on the 85 Bears, a Super Bowl champion, my favorite NFL team of all time were the 85 Bears. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time. Tom Thayer joining us. Let's start, buddy, if you would, with the off-field stadium issue. How much of is that being discussed amongst the fans? What do you think, if you were to ask fans, what do you want the Bears, where do you want them to play, what do you want it to be, what would their answer to that be?
Well, you know, from the fans, it's a nonstop topic. And I'm a guy, I grew up in Joliet, Illinois. I've been a Bears fan my whole life. I played for the Bears. I've been a season ticket holder. And I've been a broadcaster now for 30 years for those guys. So I hear it in the grocery store. I hear it wherever streets I'm walking in Chicago or in Joliet. And it's just something they want to get resolved. Okay, for the next 4 years, where can I make my plans of where we're going to be going to watch the Bears from this point on? One thing about it, I've been in every new stadium built in North America and a lot across the country in the last 40 years. So the Bears are... You know, the Bears fans, the Bears support, they deserve a world-class facility no matter where they put it. And I think that's got to be the most important requirement of wherever they built the stadium. Would I like to see it be in Illinois? Yeah. Would I like to see it be a renovated Soldier Field right on the lakefront? Probably. However, I'm not any part of the decision. So when they finally do decide where they're going to build it, just make sure they reward the fans with a world-class facility.
Yeah, that's one of the things. You think about not being a dome, you can't host Super Bowls, and that's a city, as you know, that can host all of those things and do it in spades. So be interesting to follow all of that. The good news for Bears fans are it appears that this is a roster, Tom, that's ready to have a hell of a run. I mean, it's really loaded, incredibly exciting towards the end of last season. You just want to build on that momentum. What was the second half of last season like for you as a broadcaster, seeing these young stars tight to really take shape, especially, obviously, Caleb?
You know, I think the perfect guy to be put in place was Ben Johnson. He's really the guy that changed the culture and got the ball, you know, pushed down the hill and allowing it to pick up momentum. And then he, you know, had a lot of a great working relationship with Caleb Williams, which he needed to have, considering what his expected future is and was in the NFL and where he was drafted. And, you know, everything else contributed. The tight end position, Colston Loveland, Roma Dunze, the wide receiver position, the free agent offensive lineman they brought in came and they developed a good relationship and stayed healthy throughout the season. You know, they need more production out of the defensive line last year and going forward. The linebacker position was okay, and then they had a lot of injuries at the defensive backfield. And that kind of seems like the same thing that's plaguing them right now beginning this season. Mm-hmm. And so if they can kind of solidify the rotation of 7 or 8 defensive linemen, make sure that the linebacker position can stay healthy and stay on course, and then figure out what they can do at the defensive back position. They've already had an injury, 4 to 6 month injury to Kobe Bryant. Kyler Gordon is yet to see the field. So now you put Dennis Allen in that difficult position of trying to figure out who the best defensive backfield can possibly be in a super competitive passing league. But I still have so much faith in Ben Johnson and his message to the team that he kind of keeps my belief going that it can pick up right where it left off. However, it's not going to be easy because they do have some really important pieces to replace. And a lot of the focus has been on who's going to play left tackle for the Bears. And you know how important that position is. So they got to see if one of these guys rises to the top. And it's not a decision you want to make. It's somebody that plays better than everybody else. And it's an easy decision to be made.
Tom, you mentioned Ben Johnson in your belief. We've seen a lot of these kind of hotshot offensive coordinator guys who come in and they've got all the they got the feel for play calling and all of that. And I saw this in Cleveland a little bit with Stefanski early on. But then the question become, okay, but can he also be a leader of men? What do you see in Ben? Because what I'm hearing is that he is a leader of men. What did you see in him in terms of beyond just the offensive acumen that leads you to believe that not only is he brilliant there, but guys will follow him?
Well, you know, like you mentioned, I've been around the Bears now for a lot of head coaches, and I played for the best of the best and a guy like Mike Ditka. And he got his message across from the podium, and it carried weight into the locker room. So the very first day that Ben Johnson was hired, the first thing he says, the players need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I need a running back that's willing to get the dirty yards. My wide receiver mantra is no block, no rock. And so every time he's gone to the podium and he has said something to the media, it's carried a lot of weight into the locker room. He's not sitting there telling you, oh, these guys have had an unbelievable practice. And if they keep practicing this way, we're going to win a lot of games. They went last year to Detroit the second week of the season and gave up 50 points. The first thing he said at the podium the next day was, we don't practice hard enough. And if we keep practicing like this, we are not going to win very many football games. And he is not afraid of calling guys out specifically and encourage them to play better or play up to their expectations. And I just think that when you're in a football organization like the NFL and you're always searching for alpha males, you need some in the locker room, but there is no more alpha personality in that building than Ben Johnson.
That's massive. That's massive. So then you're checking all the boxes, talking to Bears great Super Bowl champion Tom Thayer, color analyst on the Bears Radio Network. Let's have the Caleb Williams conversation right now. Year one, coaching change happens. More misses than hits, probably. Last year, electric, as certainly down the stretch, absolutely. That completion percentage, though, still south of 60%. When you think of him in year three and year two with Ben, what are you looking for specifically for him to lead you to believe that at long last you've got the guy? I'm sure you think that anyway, but just what are you looking for from an improvement standpoint from Caleb?
You know, his work ethic and his work results are evident. So I think anybody nowadays in the modern terminology of an NFL system, the difficulty of mastering the language takes a couple years. So last year when I would be out of practice and I'd stand near the huddle and you would hear Caleb get the information from Ben in his huddle, and then sometimes the hesitancy or the re-huddling because you're trying to figure out what did I say, what does the audible mean, and how does it factor in everybody else's jobs in the huddle. That is not happening anymore. Caleb can play a faster brand of football because he has been invested in the terminology. He knows what it means. He knows what the audible means. He knows how to make quick adjustments at the offensive line if somebody is out of position. And now he knows how to read the safety position after he said all that. And so I think if you can put Caleb in a position where he has a solid throwing foundation with little interruption, I think that he's the guy that can raise that completion percentage. I don't know if it's going to get to 70% this year like Ben wants him, but Ben wants points. He wants to put the ball into the hands of his playmakers in space. And when you think of, when you look at some of the guys they already have in place and some of the new guys they brought aboard, if he can get the 3.5 seconds of protection that he needs, he's going to become that quarterback that ultimately he's going to be. But the longer he has invested time in this terminology with Ben, he is the play caller. He designs this offense. He's got a great assistant coaching staff around him. But it's really the Ben and Caleb relationship that's going to take this position to that next contract that could be up near the $500 million mark.
It's crazy when you say it out loud. I know it's there, right. But like half a billion dollars for a quarterback. Tom, I'll get you out of here on this one and greatly appreciate your time, sir. As we're in the middle of August now and a couple of weeks before we get going, what is kind of your 1-4 pecking order in the NFC North?
Wow. You know, it's going to be interesting because Green Bay had a big changeover in coaches. I think they brought in 20 new coaches. The Minnesota brought in Kyler Murray. Detroit brought in a new offensive coordinator, and they're trying to replace some really important parts on the offensive defensive line and at the safety position. So whoever can replace their needs the best. And the Bears is at left tackle, defensive line, and safety. And I talk about all the other positions. Mm-hmm. I think the Bears are going to stay competitive. They're going to be right up there. And they play Minnesota week 2, and then they play them again in week 18. The key is going to be week 12 and week 17. That's when they play Detroit. On Thanksgiving Day in Detroit, and then 5 weeks later in Chicago. So as the culture change that Dan Campbell has done in Detroit is undeniable, and it's going to be a difficult circumstance to go in there Thanksgiving. I just hope 5 weeks later the outdoor weather is deteriorated so much that it's a factor on an indoor team playing outdoors in late NFL season.
It was a privilege and an honor to get to talk to you, buddy. Thank you so much for your
Thank
time.
You.
Greatly appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Tom Thayer, color analyst on the Bears Radio Network and a member of probably the most fun team in the history of the NFL, the 1985 Chicago Bears. We get you three things on a Friday. Up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
See football. Training camp report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safelon Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. Ohio State's defensive coordinator, Mac Patricia, entering his second year working with the Buckeyes. And while generally you see the defensive secondary using three cornerbacks, he talks about the possibility of three safeties.
One of the things that happens for us defensively is always, you always have to also look at see what offensive personnel is on the field. So in some of those different groups, it could be personnel based on what we're seeing that you know just has that different mix of players on the field. And I think being in between, you know, if you do have to have three safeties on the field against like a bigger personnel group, can you hold up or can you not? If you don't, then you go to bigger, obviously, personnel up front. And some of that, I think, in the back end is honestly figuring out, because there are new players on the field, what exactly are they? Are they safeties, you know, nickels, corners? Like, you know, I think we're still evaluating that through the spring and trying to figure out what are the best positions for those guys. Maybe it's just DBs. I don't know.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. We previously heard Ohio State defensive coordinator Matt Patricia talk about the use of whether it's three cornerbacks or three safeties in their defensive secondary. He also speaks on how certain situations could dictate the use of three linebackers.
I do think we have a lot of flexibility, which is nice, in both groups, which is great. Hopefully we can use both in those situations. It's interesting, you know, the game of football kind of cycles through, you know, and what is... what was old is new and kind of vice versa. So I see a lot more of those bigger groupings coming back. So obviously the bigger the offense gets, then we have to be able to hold up to that. And so maybe the third linebacker on the field is important in that situation. And then being able to have the multiple flexibilities of DBs is good because I think that puts a lot of stress on the offense. So I do think we, you know, have to try to figure out a way to do that as much as possible.
That's Ohio State defensive coordinator Matt Patricia. The season opener for the Buckeyes is Saturday, September 5th against Ball State. We'll have another report next week. This is Paul Keels on the Ohio State Sports Network. From Learfield.
It's the most to sail Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeyes sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
This summer,
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
We'll read your emails on the air, but we won't tell you where to send them.
Hey, we're not doing all the work for you.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, before we get to three things on a Friday, what are we on the poll today, gentlemen?
The Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Which college football program is the most poised for a bounce-back season this year? LSU is leading the way with 50% of the vote. Penn State is next at 23.6. Florida at 8.3. And then the category you love, Bo, others, 18.1.
Mm-mm-mm. Can't have others. Can't. It's too big. Too big. Tighten it. Tighten. Tighten. All right, time for three things on a Friday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me, Ohio State, I think you know that I'm here to help, right? I wanted the gray jerseys. The sleeves back on the jerseys took 20 years, but we got them back. So this is me trying to help. They dropped the uniforms today, so you can purchase them. You can purchase them online, the team shop. They're everywhere. On campus, at the official team shop, you need to sell customizable youth jerseys. Right now, the only youth jerseys that you can get in the new uniforms are number one.
Mm.
That's a fail.
Mm.
Do you know how many kids? I got three. Well, two. NBC probably doesn't wear jerseys anymore. I had two in the house who would die for a 4 or 10. You're going to make some money doing that, and you're going to be able to pay them some NIL for doing it. It's pretty easy. The reason I know it's easy is the Browns do it at the stadium. They have all sorts of blank youth jerseys. You go in there, you get any of them you want on the back, have them in every size. It's not hard. I'm not saying you have to do it in the red one, the white one, and the black. Just do it in the red home, fine. But you should be able to go in there and print the jerseys that you want. And to not be able to do it's a bit of a fail. And you're leaving a lot of money on the table.
So I saw this just a little after 11 o'clock this morning that the federal government has granted the NCAA a stay on the Colorado injunction allowing players from the class of 2022 to come back for another year of eligibility. Andrew Brandt tweeted this morning that he's heard that there are players in NFL camps asking to be released right now. Yeah. Rather than 2 weeks from now, so they can go back and play college football. And I heard Greg Sankey talking about this yesterday, asking for someone to help. Well, Greg, you guys did this with Brennan Sorsby. You all stood up and you said, we're not going to let this happen. We're going to make teams ineligible, regardless of what people say in courts, and we're going to make teams forfeit games. Greg Sankey, if you don't want Will Wade doing this, tell him if he uses these players, they are ineligible, and you forfeit all of your games. Salt then it. Let somebody come back after you in court if they want, but throw it out there now. I guarantee you Will Wade isn't going to use those players.
Just a little controversy around it might make those NFL players question it, too. Is it worth trying to release myself into a question mark? Because if it's not guaranteed, they're not going to try to get off that roster. That's how it goes. First thing for me, my beautiful fiance comes home today. She's down doing vet school right now, trying to become a doctor. I'm up here talking about Ohio State Buckeyes on the radio. But she comes home, so I've got a big day ahead of me. I got to get some cleaning done, dog to the groomer, mow the grass, put the house back in shape before she shows up.
Keep the sugar mama happy.
Uh-huh, got to keep this house. It's been like this the whole time, love. I swear, it's vacuumed every day.
It's never changed. Number two for me, I see the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx have been bought by $4.5 billion, one of these hedge fund guys. So this is now the four largest sales from NBA teams have all happened in the last 17 months. Minnesota, the Celtics, the Lakers twice. This can't be what the NBA wants. It can't be. And I do wonder, the more you read about this Mark Walter stuff with the LA, the more I think, my God, is there a lot of this that's going on where these guys are massively leveraged, loans out on valuations and upside down? Because none of this stuff is worth this. There's no way that it is. It doesn't make sense. So I guess you're worth what someone's willing to pay, but it's hard to believe that it's real. So it makes you think there's a little bit of a Ponzi scheme that's happening there across sports.
Probably a lot, Bo. More than we would ever guess. 26 years ago today, one of the greatest baseball ejections of all time happened. The Reds were beating the Chicago Cubs 4-1 in the sixth inning. Close play at first base. Barry Larkin's called out. Lou Piniella comes out of the dugout to argue. Slams his hat on the ground. Immediately, the umpire tosses him. And Lou immediately marches over to first base, rips it out of the ground, and throws it over towards second base. The argument continued for about another minute after that. The Reds went on to win the game 8-1. In the greatest professional sports season of my lifetime, the Reds wire to wire. I was 9 years old. 10 at the end of it. The only time any one of my pro teams has ever won a damn thing.
Second thing for me, I got some breaking news from my brother yesterday because we were talking about KC Conception and how good he looked at camp. And he was like, you know what KC stands for? And I was like, I don't know what KC stands for. I just say KC because I assume that's his name. His name's Kevin. And the C stands for Conception.
No,
so when you say Kevin, or when you say KC Conception, you're saying Kevin Conception Conception. A little redundant.
Wasn't that like JT? Wasn't it just JT? The JTT was added because it was for Tui Molau?
Yes.
Yep.
So now for me, it's just KC Jr. That's his nickname for me.
That's exactly it. Finally, number three for me, go to your high school football game. It's a beautiful night. We've had some crazy weather, but I think today's going to be pretty good. If you're looking for something to do tonight, go to your high school football game and then listen to Bake after.
Yep, that's my third thing. High school football overtime tonight after our game of the week, Olentangy Orange at Olentangy Berlin. Just go ahead at 6:30 tonight. Throw on Skip Mossick's Tonight in High School Football. Listen to the Orange Berlin game, and then make sure you turn into Lee and me after.
Final thing for me, a little bit of Rothman and Ice up next. JP in for Rothman. So we got some Joshua Perry and some Austin Ward coming up at 2 o'clock. Stay tuned for those guys.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. Have a great weekend. We're back Monday. Bishop and Friends right here. On